Coming to you live from my apartment, it's Rob Has a Podcast. And now here's the guy who's resisting all urges to talk about season 40 instead of season 39. I am Rob Cisternino. Hello, everybody. Welcome back to our finale feedback show here. And I am back in the studio after a very, very busy day on Wednesday. And I'm very excited to bring in a man who has spent more time with me in these last few days than is recommended. A man who is going on 48 hours plus of hanging out with me. And I don't know what kind of mental state that puts him in. Here is Mr. Mixmaster Mike Bloom.
Rob, it feels like an extended date. I'm sad you're not bringing a giant chocolate cake for us to stick our forks in, yes. But I'm happy to be here regardless.
Yes. Dating analogies are Nora's pedigree.
Apparently. Like, there's a specific type of metaphor that she really likes to go for. To the point where I think it was alluded to by the reaction to her starting to make a reference in the final tribal council that this was far from the first time she's made that allusion in front of them.
Yes, yes. Okay. So we're here to talk about season 39. I think maybe we'll dabble a little bit into talking about a little season 40 stuff. And we will close out this season, put a little bit of a bow on it as we walk into the Survivor offseason. What Survivor offseason? I'm so confused right now. Is this the postseason? Is it the preseason? Where are we right now? Well, Tribal Council.
I was going to say, this is very Dr. Manhattan-like, right? Like, I'm in the postseason, but I'm technically in the preseason because technically speaking, the entire Winners at War cast was revealed in that promo. So, I mean, the cast has technically been released. I guess it depends on when you mark the preseason, because some people might believe that we're in the preseason right now for season 40. I also believe this might be the shortest off-season between seasons, that is. I think we're only going like 7 weeks between seasons.
Yeah, was the off-season like one of the commercial breaks between when Jeff got done talking to Kelly and when they put the preview on for season 40? Was that the off-season?
Yeah, so obviously we'll talk about our experience of, being in the live-to-tape, first-ever pre-taped finale, and there were a lot of non-realistic commercial breaks, sometimes to the point of like 20 seconds of like, all right, lights up. Guy comes out, the typical warm guy, be like, all right, we're going to come back in 5 seconds. And then we're right back into Survivor.
Okay, so Mike and I have a lot of adventures from all day Wednesday. We're probably a little bit loopy, much like the Survivor contestants themselves. So just...
Now, that really lets us... we're in their shoes now. We're in Dean's shoes.
Yeah. Yes. We're just like, Nora, Nora, Nora.
Nora, Nora, Nora.
Yeah. So we're talking about everything that went on yesterday. But yeah, of course, people are very excited about season 40. And we'll have some stuff coming up that I know that people are chomping at the bit. Want to get to some season 40 coverage. Mike, can you talk about what you have coming up?
Yeah, consider this bit chomped. So back in the day when maybe there was a possible theory of a Survivor 40 consisting of 20 winners and a cast of who specifically those 20 winners might be, myself and a few legendary RHAP podcasters, myself, my partner on the B&B, Liana Boris, the great Ali Lasher of the Challenger Hap-Ups, and of course, Akiva Winokur, your partner, Rob, on Rob and Akiva Need a Podcast, we got together and we did a season 40 draft. It's very similar to what you did with Survivor Game Changers back in the day, where it's a time capsule podcast. It was done back in June. We had no knowledge of the Edge of Extinction, of the fire tokens, of the $2 million prize. All we knew was if this happened to occur, which 20 people would be there. So we have a lot of discussion as to each of those 20 people, what we think their chances may be. Of course, due to the four of us, it goes very derivative sometimes. Lots of mini drafts within drafts. So it's a nice little 3-hour tome and representation of what we were thinking back in June earlier this year that should be dropping, I would say, by the weekend.
Okay, so look for something, a little appetizer over the weekend.
A little amuse-bouche.
I will probably hold off on Survivor 40 preseason stuff until into the new year. I would say start to look into it into the first week in January.
Yeah, new decade, new season.
We're still closing out this season. I'm not expecting to do any deep dives into season 39 anytime soon. We have a lot of year end content coming up here. Mike and I also have a year end Brant Steele coming up for you guys to listen to in a couple of days. We also have This Week in Survivor with Dr. Mike coming your way. That's going to join Jordan Kalish and myself. So be on the lookout for that. Plus News AF and Renap. And also, I have to have Christmas, okay?
Let's all take a breath and be merry, okay? We have various reasons to be merry. Some of us more than others.
Yeah.
Congratulations to Tommy Sheehan getting a nice Christmas bonus.
nice Christmas bonus. But so just I know people are already like, hey, where's the season 40 stuff? Okay. Where's the season 39 deep dive? So all in due time.
Yeah.
Where it's currently and Dr. Manhattan esque. It is December 19th right now. So Christmas in 6 days. I do want to take a little bit of downtime here at the end of the season. We're also going to have podcast coverage of the new Netflix show, The Circle, which is going to kick off on January 1st. So we have a best of 2019 special coming up for RHAP. So we have a lot of podcasts that we're getting to in the next 12 days. So we will have plenty for you to listen to. But we're just going to hold off until we get into the new year to go full board into Survivor 40.
I mean, if I'm going to be completely honest, I feel like we all sort of need to take like a step back and take a breath in the Survivor community.
I know I do.
Well, I mean, the fact of the matter is, even if, you know, this season might have been a bit more palatable from the fans in general, we had, you know, two big seasons. We had two other international seasons as well. Like, I know that as someone who covers both domestic and international seasons, I've been pretty much going nonstop all year. And I think even, you know, you can even have too much of a good thing. And I think from a mental health perspective, you know, with a lot of important but unpleasant talk that had been going on this season, I think we all need to sort of step back and take a break. I'm excited for The Circle. As someone who has been catfished in their life beforehand, it's going to be...
You were catfished?
Yes. So, and I love bringing this tangential, right? But I feel like I'm very Nora-esque here. So back in the day, there was someone on America Online who was masquerading as... I know you don't know Lizzie McGuire, Rob, or you're not... terribly familiar with it, but it's really...
She's a movie.
Yeah, so it's big in my generation, this show, Disney show starring Hilary Duff. The second lead in that show, the actress's name was Lalaine. She played Lizzie's best friend, Miranda, and I was catfished by someone pretending to be Lalaine from Lizzie McGuire, and we were in an online relationship for about 3 months or so.
Whoa! this is going back to your man whore days.
Yes, I guess from an online perspective as well. I believe, you know, she was talking about like, oh, I've been talking with you with the other cast members of the show. I remember like bugging my parents, like, get off the internet. Like, I got to talk to my girlfriend, Lalaine.
Wow, this is was not expecting this sort of a revelation here at the start of the podcast. My mind is blown.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know. Maybe it was Lalaine. Maybe I ended up talking with a realistic person. The chance, I mean, considering that she also did give my computer a virus, I think like it's a very small chance, but maybe we'll encounter each other in life.
Please be careful, Mike. Okay.
Not a lot of protection.
No. Survivor 39. Hey, what's going on? Let's get back to the Island of the Idols, shall we?
Yeah, let's do it.
Season 39 is in the books. We got some voicemail questions to talk about here today. And I did the know-it-alls with Stephen Fishback last night. Got to talk a lot about the game with Stephen. And then you and I both were on the red carpet on Wednesday. Mike's interviews are up on parade.com. You can check out my interviews on robisawebsite.com. And on our YouTube channel, you can check out the videos as well. Did you have anything in particular or any one interview that really stood out to you, Mike?
I mean, listen, it begins with Nora. Nora is just, I love Nora since, you know, this is a very interesting season for me in many regards. One being that obviously this was the first season I was on set for. So I've sort of been tracking these people from before they even entered the game to their last technical day as a current Survivor player. And Nora was someone who stuck out to me, obviously, because she does not stick in from the very beginning.
Yes.
And to have her in this moment as well, it was like coming back home. You know, it was like, all right, some people debate how much does the screen version of a person translate to that person in real life? And I am so happy to say that Nora is Nora through and through, whether she's in the jungle, in Final Tribal Council, or on a red carpet.
Yeah. Nora, I feel like, did not get a ton of the conversation in terms of the Survivor Know-It-Alls last night, but Nora, again, really stood out in Mike and I rewatched the finale this afternoon, and Nora has a ton of great moments. I really think that this finale might have been the most fun episode of the season.
Most fun episode of the season.
Low bar.
Let me put out an even hotter take. I think, at least from a modern day perspective, this is the funniest finale.
Funniest finale.
And I think it's for two main reasons. And look, I'm sure we'll have a lot to say about, you know, Tommy's win, about the heartbreak of losing Janet and Lauren, but in my opinion, Dean and Nora made this finale.
Yeah.
Completely. This was peak Dean and peak Nora.
Peacock Dean.
Oh, no. Make sure you include that first syllable.
Yeah. Nora did have one of the highlights from the finale.
So my point is stick out, stand out, be a cock, peacock, excuse me. Be a peacock.
That's Nora.
Take your tail feathers.
So if anyone, obviously there was a lot of questions since, again, you and I were there in the first ever pre-tape finale as to, like, what, you know, what didn't make the edit?
Mm-hmm.
The fact that that made the final edit means that there was nothing cut.
Yeah, we watched the finale or the reunion show as well, and it was, you know, I could not find anything that was in the show that did not end up making the edit.
Yeah, I completely agree. And I think in terms of a timing thing, when we got out, you know, we were slated to film for the full 3 hours from 1 to 4. We got it a bit earlier, but that's because, like we mentioned before, they sort of yada-yada through most of the commercial breaks, which I think definitely cut down on the time. But yeah, from what we were watching back, even the interstitials that Jeff did in the audience, there really was not anything that was cut down, which was great in something like the Kelly interview, for instance, mm-hmm. where, you know, we can definitely talk about that situation and, you know, what they decided to show there. But I mean, they did show every second of it, including those moments when, you know, Kelly did, you know, understandably struggle to find words sometimes. And that felt good. It felt authentic.
All right. So we sort of set the table, all the things we want to cover here today. I guess let's just go back to Tommy and his win. Mike, we haven't heard you weigh in on this. What do you make of Tommy Sheehan, winner of season 39, Island of the Idols?
It's so interesting how I think a lot of us have deemed the 30s. Exactly. Have deemed...
Well, DK Chillin, the 30s?
That's that like the 40th time we've heard that name over the course of the episode.
Mm-hmm.
So actually, fun little thing. So Rob and myself and Kirk Clark, who was also at the finale, on our way to the finale,
we
made like a list of little predictions that we would do. And one of them was like, I wonder if DK Chillin's going to get mentioned at all
mm-hmm.
over the course of the finale. We did not realize the deluge of DK Chillin references that would get dropped over the course of the finale. But I think, you know, the 30s, I think, have been given this title of sort of like the advantage era of Survivor.
Advantage era.
And it's really interesting that the first that, you know, Tommy becomes the first winner since Natalie White to win without winning individual immunity, playing an idol, having an idol played on him, earning an advantage. And what it tells me, at least, is I think amidst some of the glitz and glamour that's associated with creating a big TV product in the modern day Survivor era, Survivor as a game fundamentally comes down to two things, which are relationships and information.
Mm-hmm.
And I think why Tommy won, not to take the thunder from David Bloomberg and Jessica Lewis, is because Tommy knew those were key cogs to Survivor at its heart, and he was able to utilize those. And I think, you know, it is pretty darn crazy that, you know, you have a season called Island of the Idols that features this big island, that features all these advantages, and the guy who won didn't end up going until he was forced to move there at the end and didn't end up using any advantages. But I will say, from someone who studies the game and especially as a quote unquote Survivor historian, it's a really interesting breath, especially again to sort of close out these past 10 seasons.
Yeah, it is wild. And this is something, you know, if we get to the Evolution of Strategy Volume 4 and to talk about the 30s have really been the advantage era. We talked about that in the Evolution Strategy Volume 3. Dan Foley gets the extra vote, which really sort of like kicks off the advantage era. And yes, Tony had the Tyler Perry idol. And, you know, so there have been maybe some other things that you could maybe quantify as an advantage. But like, ooh, here's something new. And really, that was how season 30 had it, and then 31 had it. And then we had like the two-part idol in Go Wrong. So we just kept building more and more on these ideas. And then to have somebody come in here at the season 39 and really not use any of that hardware to the win, I think that that was actually a very interesting development to have happened here at the end of the 30s in Survivor.
And, you know, I think that obviously, you know, there are a myriad of reactions to Tommy's win. And I think, and this is no fault of Tommy, the optics of having a fifth guy win in a row is not fun.
Mm-hmm.
But what I do think is interesting about Tommy is that I think he played extremely differently from his archetype. I think if you looked at Tommy going to the game, yes, he was a favorite to win, but I don't think people were being like, oh yeah, this is the guy that's not going to win anything and not earn any advantages. You know, people thought, okay, this is a guy that's going to be the typical alpha male, probably win some challenges, probably get a couple of idols played on him. And the fact that he was able to navigate, I mean, it's a weird comparison, but this is really one of the closest games we've seen, like, since Michelle Fitzgerald, in terms of really weaponizing these smaller social moments and being able to create a winning game from it.
I'd have to go back and think of my list of winners to be able to, co-sign that. But he definitely did an incredible job and played a very unconventional Survivor game for this period in Survivor history.
Yeah, I agree. And I think, again, you know, what it comes down to, again, is and we'll talk about Dean, you know, especially the late game surge that he had. I really do feel like the dichotomy of Dean versus Tommy. I know that we sort of got the shades of like Ozzy and Yule in that day 39 scene of, well, Nora's out of it, so it's going to come down to the two of us. But as opposed to that, which was more physical versus strategic, this, in my opinion, was story versus resume, which is, you know, a big dichotomy. I think Sophie was someone who really pointed that out as well. Of here's someone who has a bunch of bullet points of what they did in the game. And here's somebody who sort of has a narrative of, I made close connections with you. I had all these people around me who were threats so that they were going to get taken out ahead of me. And at the end of the day, the story won out.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that is important that, you know what, you could have all these baubles on you. You could have trinkets that you're literally pulling out of a bag of tricks. But if you're not connecting with people, the jury is going to ultimately vote for who they're the most comfortable with winning. And that rubric, to use another Tommy term, is determined upon each juror. But I think that's usually the common denominator. And in this case, they felt most comfortable with Tommy because he was able to make them feel comfortable.
Okay. Let me bring in a question from one of our listeners on our voicemail hotline. And this is from a listener who wants to tie in our two 2019 U.S. Survivor seasons onto one another. And here is a question. This is from Bryce.
Hi, Robin, Mike. This is Bryce. I wanted to call in because after watching the finale last night and seeing Tommy take home the victory, I've been thinking a little bit more about it in the way that he won so simplistically, talking about in his exit interview how it was akin to season one and season two. And in thinking more about it, I feel like he played the same, very similar game, at the very least, to Gavin from last season. Yet we saw Gavin kind of get panned for his game not evolving, and yet in this case we see Tommy get rewarded for it. So I would love to hear you both talk a little bit about what that looks like in terms of moving forward. Which is the game that makes the most sense, I guess, with the evolution of everything? So I'd love to hear from you both. Thanks again for your coverage of this season. It's been great.
Okay. Mike, I know Steven Fishback also a little catty on Twitter, ended up saying that
the fishy got catty.
Yeah. Dean's resume was better than Chris Underwood's from last season. So this connection has been made between the person who found things and won immunities and used advantages and made the fire in Dean and Chris. And then you had Gavin and Tommy, who did not take it. Now, Gavin won immunities, but they were seen as the person that played the more old school game, that Tommy was rewarded, Gavin was not.
So it's interesting because I would not direct it as a one-to-one comparison because, yes, while Tommy might have the same temperament and general, I guess, behaviors in the game as Gavin, I feel like he more so had the social relationship to Chris Underwood.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I think that while Edge of Extinction was a large anomaly in terms of winning games, something that really benefited Chris was he had so much time to bond with most of those jerks due to the structure of the game. And that's, again, that's what Tommy did here. From the very beginning, he was talking about, you know, utilizing one-on-one relationships, connecting with people. And I can imagine Chris was able to do that as well. And so in both capacities,
interesting.
They,
so Chris was the Tommy and the Dean.
Yeah. I mean, he was sort of like a merger of the two. You know, if the Bro Alliance finally did like a fusion dance fist bump, I think we'd end up with Chris Underwood. That could be like their love child that went back in time and played Survivor. In that, you know, he had the time and the capabilities to make those close relationships with people. And then once he ended up going to the game, then he had that late game surge. So, you know, I think had he, it's sort of like he needed both. I think had he not made the late game surge, the claim was that he might not have won. But I think also if he had not made those bonds on the edge and still had that late game surge, it might have been like a Dean situation where they're like, okay, who's Chris Underwood and why should we care about voting for you?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The jury, I think, especially the people that went out late in the game end up, I'm just trying to think if this holds. So the votes that were for Dean were Aaron and Elizabeth. People who went out maybe more in the first half of the game, I feel like that the players that make sort of like the bigger, flashier moves tend to get more rewarded by the people who were voted out first. So Jack, Kelly, Jamal, Missy didn't vote for Dean. So, I think that it was just a runaway. I think Dean was probably lucky he ended up getting the two votes. I think that everybody sort of was under the understanding, okay, Tommy and Lauren were running things. Who was in charge? Who was the follower? I think that that was debatable in the minds of the jurors. And I think that if it was Tommy and Lauren in the final three, I think that that would have been a much more interesting matchup. But Dean, I just don't think that he had the respect of the jury, even though he came on so hot late in the game.
Now, that being said, this might have been one of the most fun final tribal councils we've experienced, because I think we'll have a lot to say about the editing. That's something I want to talk about later. But I think this final tribal council, and even from a Nora perspective, it was very even handed, I feel like, between to the point where you turned to me at the end and you're like, I could see legitimately a case for any one of these three winning.
Yes. Now, the thing that we didn't get from the TV show is that I think that the jury ended up being out on Nora to a considerable degree, to the point where, did Nora talk about this in her exit interview with you, that the jury actually was extremely rough with Nora?
Yeah, she talked to me a little bit about that. And look, these things run for a very, very long time. And getting to that final tribal council, I think Janet talked about this with me when I asked her why she voted for Tommy, because she said, you know, we get this open statement from Jack of like, well, we're all undecided. Janet confirmed that to me, at least. And she said the reason why she voted for Tommy is the simple fact that he owned his game and she felt like Dean and Nora did not. And looking back and watching that final tribal council, if you look at it again through that rubric, you could very much see as to why Tommy got those 8 votes is because, you know, he admits to Janet, like, yeah, I was kind of keeping you along, but I had no intention of going to the end with you. Mm-hmm. Like, even though it hurt, I think this is a season where people made a lot of mistakes. And I think for some people, owning up to that culpability might have bore more fruit than being like, nope, this was my grandmaster plan the entire time. And so when you have someone like Dean get caught in a lie in the pouring rain about, yeah, I never made any, you know, promises I didn't keep. And oh, by the way, I wanted to be in an alliance with Elizabeth until the end. That's when things really start going south.
Yeah, I have a clip of that moment when Dean is being called out by a number of people at the same time in the pouring rain.
Dean, we're just calling you out because you contradicted yourself.
You're seeing him for what he is. Looking for opportunity, following the numbers, Charisma. Just in case numbers
we
change.
Never, ever
this is a game.
Where is this coming from?
Did you or
Why
did you not
come up earlier? Why is this only coming up now?
Because you're in the seats and I'm not, Dean.
No, I'm
That's
saying earlier we're telling you
now.
This is so interesting because, again, DK Chillin, like,
IOI,
exactly. He was just such like a very calm individual. He's very measured in the way that he spoke, to the point where he even paused when Jamal asked him that question about ethical lines. But like, this is a different Dean. I feel like Dean said, oh, I had my back up against the wall, but this feels like the most cornered Dean was the entire game. And it was really, I mean, I love Dean this episode so much, so entertaining. And this was a brand new side of him where he's just like Matt Klein's high-pitched voice. He even had the tongue out of the mouth a la Matt Klein's as well.
Yeah, Dean's tongue, I think, was the sixth castaway in the episode.
Yeah, I really wanted Jeff to do a profile on the top six, and then there's Dean's tongue.
He's been coming out of his shell more and more.
He's helping Dean spin his words.
He's making a late push. So, yeah, I thought the tribal council in the room, I thought it was very close. I was trying to talk myself into that Nora had a shot. I feel like that just would have been so fun. And, you know, Tommy's win, I think he really did an incredible job. I think where it ends up being not fun, you know, the whole thing with the 5 men in a row. And again, that's not Tommy's fault. That nothing to do with Tommy. But everybody was really set up with. And Robin Sandra talked about how you think that the winner of the season is going to be a woman. And then Rob said, hey, I was born at night, but not last night.
Yeah, that's unfortunately the smoking gun.
Yeah, well, that's a question that a couple of our listeners were talking about in our patron group of like, why was that in there?
So
why was there this prophecy? The Rob and Sandra, they are our survivor idols, false idols, perhaps. Why did they show them not only Sandra, like, hey, you want to make a bet on this? And Rob said, hey, I'm not even going to take that bet because it's such a bad bet.
So, in editing parlance, I feel like they like to set up what are known as distractions. You know, there is a winner of the season, but they want to come in with as many contenders as possible. And I think you can look at like the last two episodes for Dean as an example, right? That like, oh, wow, interesting push for Dean. He has all these big scenes. He has all these big moves. Could Dean actually win this? I personally believe that scene was meant to do that, to set up doubt that like, oh, yeah, Tommy looks like he's in a good spot, but it could be a woman this season. So from a purely like on paper perspective, that's where they would come from. That being said, I thought it was completely mishandled.
Yeah,
I think it was very tone deaf.
My guess is on this is that I think that whoever was putting the episode together thought like, oh, what a great button to the scene. I was born at night, but not last night. Hilarious. That's a great line. Put that in there. And I don't even think that they were thinking of that, right? People were going to read into, okay, oh, this is a prophecy. This is just like, oh, this is Robin Sandra. And maybe they're even like, and I talked about this at the time, like, hey, remember when they made that bet in Heroes versus
Coach
Villain
climbing the tree?
About Coach climbing the tree. And so this is like a fun thing that Robin Sandra do. They make bets with each other, not even thinking about the outcome of how that was going to be.
Yeah, I mean, it's because it has been something that I think the fans have become concerned about. And, you know, preseason, even Jeff talked about it with me even before the season started, of like, this is a very strong group of women. We had a lot of societal talk revolving around issues that involve women in mm-hmm. their day-to-day. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, it was just tough to look at that and then look at the ultimate outcome, where even the top two were guys, you know, that you had this row of, I think, like, 5 or 6 women going out in a row in the end. And, you know, it ends up being that, oh, yeah, here's a guy winning again. I think it's very dispiriting for mm-hmm. people. And again, that's no offense to Tommy whatsoever, but it's tough. And I think, yeah, people really read into that scene because they wanted hope there.
Right. Is Tommy not supposed to try to win? That I mean, Tommy, if Tommy played in season, if this was season 35 and right. Tommy's win came right after Sarah Lucina's win, like, yeah. You know, I think that Tommy would be, you know, much more celebrated in terms of. But it's just that he happened to be the fifth person. And, you know, with season 40, you know, I guess flip a coin. You know, flip the Boston.
Don't say that. That's a hot button issue.
Sorry. But, you know, that it like, you know, it's unlikely that 6 men would win in a row. But in any given season, supposedly it should be that, you know, it's a 50-50, a man or a woman is going to win.
Now, I am really intrigued because, again, this was a very strong female cast. I will say
supposed to be 50-50.
And I will say, you know, I think that my sense of, and I think we definitely hear our thoughts about the season near the end here, but my sense, at least I can extricate, I think, my thoughts on the cast from my thoughts of how the season played out. I think, with one exception, I think this was a dynamite cast. And I think especially, you know, this was a really strong group of female castaways. And I really am interested in, when I was out there interviewing these 39 castaways, Angelina was brought up often. Mm-hmm. And I think Jeff has sort of chalked it up as well of like how casting Angelina, I think, you know, really brought up some new conversations for them. I'm really interested for newbie seasons moving forward, how much people are, you know, going to be inspired by your Janets, your Elaines, mm-hmm. your Laurens. And is that going to change the paradigm of how people within the game sort of perceive those types of people, you mm-hmm. know? Is it sort of like these people had to walk so that they could run in a weird way?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right. So that's our top story at this hour with everything going on with Tommy. And, you know, you and I were there at the finale yesterday, and it's always an interesting experience to be at the finale and be in the room and sort of like get the live reactions from everything that's going on. And, you know, I thought that the room, the people that were there, you know, responding, you know, very favorably to the episode. And I talked about this on the Know It Alls last night. I think that just like not having Dan in the episode was able to be like a lightness around the season that we have not had in the last month and a half on the show. And I do think that, you know, a lot of that lightness came out of this relationship with Dean and Nora.
Yeah. I mean, who knew? I mean, we saw a clip of Rob and Amber. Who knew star-crossed lovers, Rob, would make their way to the beaches once more? Dean and Nora, no one thought they were the Sam and Diane of season 39, and here they are, dating in the jungle.
Yes, okay. Well, I am ready for the Dean and Nora spinoff.
You want Nora Hart's Dean?
Nora Hart's Dean. I'm ready for it, and I thought that the two of them both had, you know, so much personality in this episode.
Yeah, and it's interesting. I've seen some arguments of, you know, that maybe because, you know, obviously a lot of the talk, and arguably you could say that the story of the season, what will be remembered, is the issues revolving around Dan, was removing him before the finale, sort of obfuscating the issue. I totally see that point. I think your perspective as well, though, if when you're hosting a live finale and you want it to be this big event, it didn't feel like sweeping it under the rug to me, because we did have the moments where, you know, you brought it up with Kelly later on in the reunion, but it did bring a certain like exhale, you know, of like, okay, these are five people. I thought it was a super interesting top five, and I think that again that speaks to the strength of the cast. I also really liked that it was a five person finale.
Yeah,
too. Like it really, we got to marinate in that final five. You know, they moved to Island of the Idols. They had what I thought was a really fun idol hunting scene. Really made me long for the days of like following those clues. Painted on trees and on coconuts to get idols. But then we were able to, you know, languish in like, okay, what's happening with the nullifier? You know, it really felt like we were not clipping along where we really didn't understand the decisions that were being made.
Yeah, I really, of the many things that I would like to see Survivor do, I think retire the 20-person cast. I know we have that for season 40 with the winners at war, but, you know, if you're not bringing back returnees, retire 20 people for a new player. It's too many people. We don't get the chance to know anybody. Things feel very, very rushed, and then we're forced with these super packed finales, and I feel like the five person finale ends up being I think the first one since season 35.
Yep, I would say so, because 36, 37 and 38 all had six person finales. So it ended up becoming a really interesting one, and like you said, like we had so many fantastic Dean and Nora specific moments that we were able to sort of take advantage of, and it didn't feel like we were languishing in anything. We were entertained. I would say the room was super interesting in that Dean and Nora got, Janet obviously got, I think, the biggest ovation, as was shown when she was brought out. But I would say Dean and Nora got like the next biggest pops, where by the end, people were outright cheering for them near the end. And not to say that Tommy wasn't getting his own ovation as well. But I mean, again, I think the episode was really about them from an entertainment perspective.
Yeah. Nora ends up being the person, she wins the final four immunity,
which is an incredible outcome.
You know, she goes to the final tribal council. I was really hoping that it was going to work out. I have so many, I'm trying to get to that. We have so many great Nora moments from this episode.
Let's just like go through the Rolodex here, because I was still laughing upon just listening to them in isolation. They're so good, Rob.
Yeah. All right, so Nora ends up really coming into prominence in this episode when Dean, DK Chillin, ends up deciding that, of all people, Nora was going to be the person that he takes on the reward after winning the Final Five immunity, surprising even Jeff Probst.
I'm going to take Nora.
Really?
Yes.
And I loved it, too. So we saw this last episode. I think it was mentioned on Reddit, but it happens here again, where when Dean wins immunity, he likes to, like, hit Jeff Probst.
Yeah, Dean's a big like hitter.
He talks a lot with his hands, and I think that's the salesman in him.
He talks a lot with his hands, and now you know it seems like he's doing this to Jeff. He does it a ton with Tommy.
Yeah, they're like
especially in the final drive account. They're like brothers.
Yeah, they're
like,
slapping each other.
Yeah,
felt like, were you seeing Anthony and Dominic in the final tribal council?
Yeah, Jeff's like, guys, stop, guys, knock it off.
Yeah, but and so it happens here where if you guys don't remember when Dean says I'm going to take Nora, he's standing looking at the rest of the final five, and he just like slaps Jeff across the chest,
mm-hmm.
to, like sort of get his attention, thinking Jeff is distracted somehow.
Also, Dean ends up with the title of the finale, which a lot of people I'm sure didn't know, but here's the title of the episode:
Mama, look at me now.
Mama, smell me now, smelling like money.
Mama. Look at me now is the title for the finale. So there you go.
Oh, boy. Yeah. Who knew Lori Kowalski would get a name drop here in the finale?
Yeah, Mama, look at me now. I thought it was also interesting between the Tommy and Mommy stuff that they went with that for, the episode titles. This season have been off.
They've been interesting. Look, I think we yearn for the days of YOLO Let's Play. Now we're ending with a Mama, look at me now. But yeah, I mean, people have made the comparisons. Tommy, he said he made some big moves. He did invoke some Sierra here. He did vote out his mommy.
Yep. Okay. So then Nora and Dean are going to go on the date. And Nora, who only in the last episode hated Dean's guts.
Yeah, to the point where she hung up his shoes.
You know, we had a bunch of different quotes about how Nora felt about Dean in the last episode. She really was upset about him. She said of the many things about Dean.
We come back to camp and Nora is a little pish.
You're disturbing.
She said it's disturbing. She said,
I'm telling you, I was never going to put you down tonight, and I'm sorry I let this all get the best of me. I waited to the end of the day. I shouldn't have, but I was just going to tell you guys in tribal, Dean is sick in the head.
Again, it's this rom-com thing of like, man, they hate each other, but one reward is going to change everything.
Yeah, and so, all right, so Dean takes her out on the reward, and Nora is feeling a lot differently about Dean.
When Dean chose me, I felt like I was walking into a date.
And as we know, Nora loves comparing things to dating.
I am very surprised that Nora sought watermelon on the edge of the, under the aisles instead of dates. I assume she just really wants to dig into a nice bag of dates.
She is sitting there with Dean and she's, have you ever dated a person as crazy as me?
I think he said no. I think he outright, again, this is Dean being like that, hey, I'm more worried about you than I am about Karishma. He flat out says to her face, like, no, I don't think I have Nora.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then Nora becomes sort of smitten with Dean
out of nowhere
on like day 37.
Yeah. Why did she find the love goggles on Island of the Idols that were left behind from Wendell's?
I think Darnell dropped them. So
yeah, when he took his own poop in the ocean, like Dean did.
Oh, no. Yeah, that was another thing from this episode.
And we're past the red phase. Now it's the beach phase.
I really need to take a poop.
I'll be looking.
But in theory, Rob, I think that was the moment when we realized Dean couldn't win. Because didn't you theorize long ago that like winners pee, they don't poop?
Oh, that's interesting. I don't know if that has anybody broken that.
Oh yeah, I don't know who broke the seal, but I mean, Dean was destined to be number two after that.
Yeah. So Nora, feeling smitten with Dean, she ends up talking about now she's working with Dean, but also working with Tommy.
I'm a hot commodity right now. It's like I'm answering the phone and I'm like, hello, Tommy calling, hello, Dean calling.
This is, I never thought we'd get a dream phone reference on Survivor. And here's Nora voicing that plastic phone that you pick off of. Who are the hot commodities that are calling me tonight to want to be in an alliance with me?
Mm-hmm. So there's Nora, and she's really like feeling good about her position.
Yeah, I think she said at one point on the date, she's like, you're a man now, Dean. I thought you were a boy once. So I'm happy Dean had his like Survivor bar mitzvah in front of Nora.
Okay.
You read that to Tora Nora.
Tora Nora. All right. So then we also get Nora in a confessional. talking about where she is in the game. But then she ends up getting distracted, where she talked a couple of weeks ago about Pretty Dean. She ends up catching Pretty Dean out of the corner of her eye as she's talking to the producer.
So it's a tough balance between what does Nora want to give others and what does Nora want? I mean, now... Sorry, I see Pretty Dean stretching, going in the water. He's freaking everywhere. Now I'm at a loss for words.
All right, so I think we found our Pretty Woman reboot cast, Rob.
Yes, okay,
it's called Pretty Dean.
Pretty Dean.
Where Nora hires Dean to be her ally.
Mm-hmm.
It says, you know, make a bet. Like, I don't think you can turn this Dean. He's just a boy. He's mm-hmm. not a man. You can't make him be your ally. And in the process, Nora starts to fall for him. Mm-hmm. You know, she never thought about romanticizing.
When does Dean fall for Nora?
I think it's still up in the air. Maybe it's when she forces him to make, when she literally lights him on fire.
Yeah, that's going to be later. That's going to be later when she is going to break the news to Dean that he's going into the fire.
I told you, yeah, I would commit to you because at that point, your game wasn't as hot as it is right now. You're on fire right now. Literally, you're going to be on fire tonight.
I am obsessed with this new character, Bad News Nora, where she just
has
the worst, like, you know, they you know, they say death becomes her. I mean, literally, it happened to your grandmother. I'm so sorry to tell you.
Boy, Nora can deliver the bad news. I mean, could they have her like she should be a newscaster?
Yeah, exactly. Like, well, you know, they said that unfortunately the Zika outbreak would cost an arm and a leg, and the bad news is unfortunately many amputees were victims of this unfortunate crisis.
In financial news tonight, well, they say what goes up must come down, and the stock market is crashed and your 401k is empty.
I am here for the Nora news. Just her using these like aphorisms to break bad news to people.
So Nora is then, you know, again, like she has the, you know, the hard eyes right now,
right,
for Dean. And Tommy is trying to tell her, like, look, he's just being nice to you. Like, don't buy it, Nora. But she likes it. She wants to buy it.
Dean's done you wrong a lot, too. He's being survivor nice at this point.
He's being so survivor nice, but I'm enjoying it. I mean,
exactly.
I'm going to enjoy it.
But, you know,
yeah, it's fine. It's not hurting anything.
Have fun.
Like, you know, we don't have to like you know, be mean about it or anything.
Yeah, exactly.
It's
like he let me stick a fork in cake. He let me eat the frosting.
If he's calling, and it doesn't hurt anything to talk to him.
Yeah,
it's
Dean
fine.
Calling. It's like, I also liked how Nora was her own caller ID.
Yeah.
She's her own Star 69. Farmed guy Star 69.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. So Nora ends up then going from there to, you know, everybody's sort of posturing, okay, Nora, you're going to take me to the end. And it was almost like that they have manifested this into existence, that Nora would go on to win the final four. And then Jeff asks Nora, how is she feeling after winning final four?
What's the emotion right now?
My emotion is like, woo!
I don't think we ever had the attitude of a tailgate really immersed in Survivor, but it really felt like this is like post game, you know, like post homecoming game. Like, Nora, your team just won by 7. What are you thinking right now? Woo! She's doing cartwheels.
She's very excited. Yeah.
I mean, that chocolate cake really got to her.
Really, it really got to her. Then Nora begins to start to now, okay, I'm going to day 39. Got to start to sort of like think about my game. And what is she going to say?
And look, there are no sticks and leaves left on Island of the Idols, so she's got to go completely verbal on this one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, Nora, how would you describe your game here in season 39? This is Mike's favorite.
My game has been bold, zesty, flavorful, interesting, unique, healthy, fun, different.
Why does she say healthy?
I think most of these words do not apply to a Survivor game. Here, let's hold on. Let's go.
My game has been bold.
Bold? You can have a bold Survivor game. We'll give her that
one. I think you could be a bold player. Bold typeface. I'm assuming she used that in a lot of her votes as well. Okay. Thick marker.
Zesty.
A zesty Survivor game. A zesty?
Yeah, I mean, she might have earned the zesty in some of these episodes. But I think zesty is strange. Like, I'm not a fan of zest in my food personally. It feels like food particulate. And I don't know if I want to embody that.
Yeah, what is zest? Like an orange peel?
Yeah, it's like you like basically grind the rind.
Grind the rind.
Grind the rind.
Yikes.
And that's essentially like what you use to, I guess, add texture, add some flavor. But I think we realize in the first half of this that Nora is maybe a little hungry still, considering that, like, or she's just picking adjectives off an Applebee's menu, considering that, like, what's flavorful is the next one.
Flavorful.
Flavorful.
Yeah, you know what it is? I think in some cartoons, you know, when you see characters are starving, like in a lifeboat, and they see other characters as like chicken wings, I think Nora sees herself as that. She's like so hungry. She's visualizing herself as food. She's like, Nora is bold. She's zesty. She's
salty.
Flavorful.
Sweet.
Tender.
Interesting.
Interesting?
Unique.
Unique. Okay.
We're back on track. We're back on track.
Healthy.
Now she took a few seconds pause to come up with the word healthy.
A healthy survivor game. I mean, was it because she didn't eat any of the meat rewards?
I guess it is the most sustainable survivor game. The most green.
Was a healthy game.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know how much carbo loading she did.
She ate a lot of coconuts.
That's true. Oh my god, yeah, maybe that is the healthiest survivor, is the one who eats the most coconuts.
Fun. Different.
Fun and different.
Okay, so like, I'd say about half of those were applicable. The other half seemed like it could be in like a Sara Lee cookbook.
Yeah, the other half sounds like they describe a Jamba Juice.
Yeah, give me the zesty, healthy Nora.
Yeah.
With a boost of woo!
Yeah. Again, Nora's game could best be described in three words.
This decision is very important, and I'm going to be selfish. I'm going to be Nora, Nora, Nora. Nora, Nora, Nora.
You and I both had the chance to meet Nora, and Nora absolutely was as depicted on the screen. I loved Nora.
I loved her so much.
And you know, I want to say this, everybody that I met from the cast yesterday was really, really incredible.
I think especially all things considered, you know, I can assume we were talking about the finale being a bit of an exhale for us. I can only assume what it was for them.
Sure.
Given everything. And they celebrated in style. And that was another reason why I wanted to come out too, is because like this is a really great group of people. And I think they were awesome on the red carpet too.
Yeah, I really like this group. We went out last night and we got to see so many of them. And then again, you know, sort of like once you had the, you know, Danectomy of this cast, like it really did like, oh, like it's like this is a totally different light.
Yeah.
To be viewing this group.
What a party. There's survivors from past, present, future. In the case of one Survivor 40 contestant was there. There was Bruce Caniguy being the resident cameraman walking around recording things. Lots of dancing.
Yeah.
I can't recall a Survivor after party that was so dance heavy. I mean, I guess Jason...
Well, usually it's like, so it was a bigger space.
Right.
Usually everybody's like so packed in.
I'm so surprised though. I mean, Jason was in attendance, but he was allowing the dancing. Has he changed his edict?
Maybe when he's not on Survivor. So Nora then is going to then have this great moment. And this is maybe the most fun of the final four fire making decisions of that. Nora knew what she was going to do.
Oh, so this is definitely the biggest case of HOHitis we've ever seen on Survivor, right?
I mean,
Nora's in her robe.
Yeah, it wasn't just HOHitis. It was also like a final four like eviction on Big Brother of like, all right, Nora, stand up in front of the house and tell us, you know, who's going to be up on the block.
But then this would be the case where Nora stands up. And she goes, great, Julie, I'm going to go take a shower really quick. So just hang out on the live show for a second while I go take care of that. This was brilliant. She gets back to camp and you know what? Originally, they have people, you know, pitching their case usually when this final four fire making stuff. But Nora says, I know what I'm going to do, but I'm not going to tell you yet. I'm going to go wash off. I'm going to go have some coconut and I'll come back. And we see, I don't know if Tommy, Lauren and Dean had gotten up.
They were so mad.
But she came back and they were in the exact same seats.
They were so annoyed.
They were like, so mad.
We're like, this is so brutal.
This is the worst case so scenario.
Yeah, this is so annoying. And then ultimately that we see that Nora is going to eventually try to explain it. And she had a lot of great moments in this. We played the ending for you. This is Nora. I think that she's talking about Tommy here.
I gave you my number. I gave you a wink. You still didn't call me, and other people are calling me.
Nora!
Yeah.
I realize, you know what? I feel like, and maybe I'm not, it's wrong for me to assume, I don't know how much Nora texts. I feel like Nora's really into the phone calls, right? She's into like,
oh, let's you think that if you're friends with Nora, she calls you.
Yeah, like, let's talk. I need to hear your voice. I can't get the tone from the texting.
I need to hear Nora's voice because I am ready for a, you know, I'll clear out a whole day.
If you pick up the phone, will she go, Nora calling?
I got Rob is calling me. So I hope so. I hope so. I really thought that I don't know. Maybe one other person like Nora. That's it.
No, she is so, I mean, she says it later on, right? She's not replicable. Like, you cannot make a clone of Nora. There's no clonoras going on.
Yeah. All right. So Nora is going to then tell Lauren and then tell Dean they're going to the fire. Lauren's not happy.
No, it's actually very reminiscent of the aforementioned Jason Tribal Council, where, like, this is really her reconciling with, like, wow, I've been playing a really good game, but, like, this is the first time that, like, my dreams could literally go up in smoke. And so, yeah, she walks down the beach. It's a pretty sad image to watch her try to make fire while tears are streaming down her face. And it doesn't help that someone's hovering over her while all this is happening. Yeah.
Now, we found out then on the red carpet then that Tommy was pushing for Nora to go annoy Lauren when this was all happening. So this does come off in the episode like, oh, crazy Nora.
Yeah, where like you hear a clip of her being like, okay, I'm going to leave you alone. Like, I'll let you be. And then 2 seconds later, you hear her talking again. But we don't know what the passage of time was. She might have come back. Tommy, as you said, might have guided her to like, no, go, you know.
Yeah, go bother, you know, we got to make sure Lauren doesn't win immunity
right,
tonight.
Right, because let's remember, and Nora explained this, her goal right now is to get rid of Lauren. And that's, you know, a big reason why she puts Dean in. You would think, like, let's have Lauren and Tommy, they're the big power couple, let's have them go against each other. But if her goal right now is, I want Lauren out of this game, and I want the best
person. Can't beat Lauren.
Yeah, it's actually very similar to the very first one we saw, where Chrissy doesn't want Ben in the final three.
Mm-hmm.
And so she's gonna pick the person who's better at fire of the other two options to try to beat him.
Yeah. I do wonder, and again, I suspect that this jury was never going to vote for Nora. That had Nora said, and I have no idea if Nora is good at making fire. I suspect she might be, but that's sort of just like rampant speculation.
I don't know. I feel like she'd be eating that coconut husk instead of actually.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's very healthy.
Very healthy. It's zesty. So, but if Nora did the Chris Underwood,
yeah.
And Nora said, like, hey, everybody, Lauren's the biggest threat. If she gets to the final three, she's going to win. So I'm making the fire again. And then it would be like, what, Nora? Like, look, that's how I do it. Like you've never seen anybody like me. They haven't seen Chris Underwood. And
this has never been done before.
This has never been done before. And then, hey, I am the woman. I made fire. I'm up against these two men. I drag these two guys to the final two. These are my goats, and I'm here. I wonder if maybe that would have been, because just the way that this ended up being, this blow to Lauren ended up being delivered. We talked about the bad bedside manner for Nora. It just ends up where Lauren, who, you know, comes around on it, like, is become so upset with Nora over this. The way that this was handled, it was just butchered.
Right. And speaking of butchering, Nora got to a point to prove that she is so in Lauren's corner that she would have removed the tools that are used for butchering.
Yeah. This was the height of the argument between Nora and Lauren.
Please, I
will steal all the machetes from you if you're going to be like this.
I am giving you this time so you can do what you want with it.
I'm not
giving
me anything.
All right, we're talking
for
5 minutes.
You're telling me you're going to steal the machetes. That's insane.
I'm telling you that
that's
I'm giving
crazy.
You space, and I'm telling you if I wanted to, I could do whatever I want to incapacitate you.
Do
what you need to do tonight.
Make you feel better.
Well, Rob, you said that Nora, there's no one like Nora, but sounds like one particular person when Nora's saying that thing. You know?
Yes. Yes.
Could Nora Russell Hance have been a thing? Could Nora have finished in a Russell Hance like manner?
I could hide the machete. I could incapacitate you right now.
Dean, you're literally on fire. I'm that good. I burned a person.
So
my game is zesty.
Zesty. Healthy.
I feel like in Russell Cobain is like, yeah, there's pretty Dean over there. My pretty dumbass Dean Alliance.
So, or were you going to go back through, do all the Nora clips as Russell?
I mean, it could be a thing, you know. I think Russell would be like, it's all about Russell, 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 Russell.
I'm a hot commodity right now. It's like, I'm answering the phone and I'm like, hello, Tommy calling. Hello, Dean calling.
I'm answering the phone. I've got poverty calling me. I've got Natalie White calling me.
Exactly. Or like, listen, I'll be surviving as I'm enjoying it.
I got Sandra over there. I got
Sandra
Coach.
Sandra blocked my number.
So, yeah, I don't know.
I like legitimately, and I think the way the jury considered her, it's not too dissimilar from the way they regarded Russell Haynes. I mean, granted, Russell was I think burned more bridges from just the way he treated people, but I think they similarly regarded as like, what a cuckoo person. Like, we will not acknowledge this person. And I feel bad.
Yeah, they both made it to the final three. Didn't do great.
I cannot believe we've seen like converging paths here. Who would have thought? But
I guess Sandra is the Tommy and then Dean is the Parvati.
Yeah. And I think that I do feel for Nora here, though, because I think that I really do feel like, to your point,
Nora or Russellman Hans.
Nora Salman Hans. Just mix all the names together.
What are we, Steven?
Yeah. I'm going to be the caller. I'm going to lead my tribe. Janet, walk into the fire. Burn your socks. This is a secret mission. Nobody knows.
Yeah. So, Mike, we're going to then get to Nora in the final tribal council, and Nora is going to give us
she goes full Busey.
The blueprint. The blueprint for her game was an acronym.
So for me, I created these mnemonic devices. The first one was, don't be bland, don't be bossy, don't be lazy, don't be annoying, don't be not trustworthy, and don't be dead in the water at a challenge.
Okay. First, when she said don't be bland, I thought this was Jeff Rashade. No need for that.
Yeah, or channeling Gary Busey on The Celebrity Apprentice with all of his Gary, backronisms or Buseyisms was Buseyisms. The name for it.
Okay. All right. Don't be bland. Let's just...
Let's break it down.
Yeah. And look... Tommy did just fine with us.
Yeah. Listen, if social media is of any concern, I think this is also, do we call these like the new HF rules?
Yeah. Okay. So, all right. Let's just go through one more time. Let's see if there's any merit to don't be bland.
So for me, I created these mnemonic devices. The first one was don't be bland. Don't be bossy.
Don't be bossy.
I think that makes sense. Yeah. I mean, granted, I don't know how much, I mean, B might have been sacrificed a bit in the beginning when she was very concerned about people looking for coconuts. But I think by the end, maybe with the exception of the final four, she was able to stick to that.
Be lazy. Don't
be lazy.
Oh, that
good.
was like she put L above all.
Yeah.
I think that was like her number one commandment here was like, do not be lazy. Mm-hmm. Considering like the main criticism of Karishma was that she was lazy.
Yeah. But those were coming from Nora.
Exactly.
She was also looking at the world through a bland colored lens.
Yeah. She colorblind. She colorbland.
Colorbland.
Be annoying.
Don't be annoying.
All right. Well, that's annoying is in the eye of the beholder.
Yeah. Wasn't annoying to me.
No, not to us. Not to us, at least.
Don't be not trustworthy.
All right. This is where she starts to lose the plot a bit.
Yeah. Double negative here. Don't be not trustworthy.
I mean, this is quintessential Nora, though, because it feels like it's more infinitely complicated than it should be.
Don't be not trustworthy.
Yeah. So don't be untrustworthy. But you have to begin it with an N. Can we find a synonym for untrustworthy?
Let's see. Untrustworthy.
Don't be nefarious.
Okay.
And don't be dead in the water at a challenge.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay. Dead in the water at a challenge.
So I know Nora says brevity is not her strong suit. And I think it shows here. She needed a clip at the end. So she's like, was trying to get it under the deadline of, and don't be dead weight at a challenge.
Well, dead weight, I think, would probably be fine. I think she could have just been dead weight, I think, would be fine for D. She says, don't be dead in the water at the challenge.
So, I mean, maybe that's why the wiggle challenge was so, like, prominent for her, right? Because she was, like, encouraging Karishma to wiggle along. She did not want to be dead in the water or dead in the sand.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. All right. Then We also then one more Nora clip. We played one more Nora clip. No, we played the one from the finale. Then Nora goes into, you know, we talked so much about how Nora sees the game as a metaphor for dating.
And again, I feel like the Russell Hands comparison is there, right?
Yeah.
At least outside of the game too.
Nora is going to then tell the jury about that this is just like dating, this game.
Everyone thinks, if I do this and I do that and then I'm going to work with these people, sometimes it's like going on a date. I want to ask you some questions. I want to learn more about you.
That is Nora wooing at the end of that thing.
This is the sad woo, right? The happy woo was woo! I just won the challenge. It's the degrees of woo.
Yeah. Nora was feeling woo-like in the final tribal council also.
Yeah, and I think, maybe it was also like the Nora train slowing down on the station. Like, uh-oh, the coal's run out real soon. This is not healthy or zesty.
Yeah.
I love that. I know some people have complained that, you know, with the burgeoning juries, that it's sort of become more like a studio audience. But I just love that peanut gallery of everybody be like shutting her down.
Immediately. Nope, we're not hearing this again. We're not. It's not like dating. Stop it. Nope.
Oh, I love it so much. Yeah. God, she was so much fun. So much fun.
Nora was so much fun. Let me see. I got a Nora question for you. This is from Jillian from Orlando. Here is Jillian.
Hi, Rob. This is Jillian from Orlando. And I have a question for you. So through all the crap that we had to go through season 39, I think one beautiful shining light that we got through this season was Nora. So my question is this: how do you think Nora will play in her eventual returning season? Because this season we got good old Nora, who had never seen Survivor before. But in a returning season, we would have Nora, who has watched like probably all of Survivor by then and consumed every single minute of Rob Has a Podcast by then.
Mm-hmm.
Perhaps we could have a super genius, normable. I don't know. Thank you. Bye.
Okay. Thank you, Jillian. Mike, did you talk to Nora at all about returning to Survivor at any point?
She's game. She was firmly in the happy woo on the scale of happy woo to sad woo.
Yeah. I'm not sure if this was in my interviews or in talking with her, but right. There was definitely like this. It's not if I come back, when I come back.
Yeah.
So Nora is, I think, definitely thinking about a second go round on Survivor.
And it's interesting because you have really brought about the adage that, you know, when people come back, they often like to emulate the winner of their season. And I could really see it here with Tommy. When I talked with her, what she really reflected to me, especially in her final tribal council stuff, was she's like, you know, I did all this stuff. You know, there was a secret scene where she set up like the Nora Society, where she wanted to do yoga and make people like her. And she admitted, like, Tommy did that and much better.
Mm-hmm.
And so I really wonder if she's almost going to double down on building those relationships while also trying to make some big swings at the same time. And we saw that for a brief second. You know, it would have been interesting for a myriad of reasons had they been able to pull off that move at the final eight and get Tommy out. Had she made it to the final three, like, could she have made a case for herself based on that? Because unfortunately, the stigma she was given was, Elaine even said it, like, no, Nora, like, I don't think you have a strategy. You're emotional. Mm-hmm. And I feel like she got a bad rap there. I think that it is so tough to divest emotions from the game. And I think being able to work with people's emotions in such a pressurized game is a talent in and of itself. And I think Nora actually did defend herself pretty well in that moment. But it was very clear from that perception that I think they thought her game paled in comparisons to what Tommy and latter-day Dean were doing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I don't know how much Nora can change. Like, I think Nora is, you know, always going to be Nora. And I think that she should look at that as a good thing. I mean, that if Nora tries to be somebody else, I don't think it will work. It will come off as disingenuous. I think that what Nora probably would need to do most is to sort of like, okay, well, let me see. How do I tell the story of what I'm doing for Nora? But I think Nora is going to be Nora no matter what. I'm just really interested to know what would the returning players, assuming she's on some sort of an all-star season, what would they do? Are they going to look at Nora like I would feel like that in when Philip came back. I think the people look at Philip, okay, I want to go to the end with Philip.
Oh, imagine Nora and Dean coming back on a Favorites Tribe on a fan versus favorite right. season, Philip and Francesco all over again.
Will people look at Nora and say, hey, I am going to attach myself to Nora. I want to go to the end with Nora and be like what Tommy did and then go to the end with Nora in this season? Or will people say, hey, Nora is a wild card and she is going to take up a spot in the finals if we don't get rid of her now? Would she be a target for being somebody who's a potential person on a fast track to the end?
So a factor that I think would really be included and something that we should be mentioned at the end of all of this, Nora is the winningest, almost sounding like Bryce here, the winningest person in terms of challenge performance in this season. She won three individual immunities. Mm-hmm. That's, you know, over Dean, who won twice. And we had, Aaron won twice as well.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that could be something where once you get to the individual stage, it's like, well, we know that, you know, Nora has the capability to win these types of modern survivor challenges. Let's not give her the chance to do so. And so that could just be another factor that incorporates where maybe it's not even about her perception and whether she's going to be another goat at the end. Maybe it's more so like, hey, Nora could win out. And mm-hmm. that, and that's more of a matter of taking up a spot for me than someone trying to bring her to the end.
Okay. Mike, we still have more questions to talk about, stories from the finale, talk about everything with Kelly. But first, let me just thank our sponsors. First, let me take a moment and thank our friends over at the Purple Mattress. Mike, I could tell you today that getting sleep is important. It's very important.
Yeah, we've learned
feeling like yourself if you don't get enough sleep, don't get good sleep.
Yeah, I mean, if you don't have beds like they did on Island of the Idols or hanging plants or bookshelves, it's tough to rough it.
Yeah, and if you're struggling to get a good night's sleep, you got to try out the Purple Mattress. The Purple Mattress was founded by two brothers who have been developing cushioning technology for 30 years on things like medical beds and wheelchairs. And in 2016, they finally decided to use their patented comfort technology to create Purple, the world's most scientific mattresses. How is Purple different from other mattresses? Well, the Purple Mattress will probably feel different than anything you've experienced because it uses a brand new material that was developed by an actual rocket scientist. It's not like the memory foam that you're used to. The Purple material is also very unique because it's firm and soft at the same time, so it keeps everything supported while feeling very comfortable. Plus, it's breathable, so it sleeps cool. It ends up giving you a zero gravity feel that works in any sleeping position. Mike, could you rattle off a bunch of adjectives that might describe the Purple mattress?
Purple, soft, rectangular,
healthy,
very zesty. You'll feel very zesty when you wake up.
You're going to love Purple. Right now, our listeners will get a free Purple pillow with the purchase of a mattress. And that's in addition to the great free gifts they're offering site-wide. Just text the word ROB to 84888. The only way to get the free pillow is to text ROB to 84888. That's R-O-B to 84888. Message and data rates may apply.
We should also mention that I believe Tommy broke the orange curse, right? Just look at his hair.
Oh, yeah. Good. Good
job. It's officially broken now.
Purple buff orange hair.
Yeah, exactly.
He did it.
That was, people I think had their sticking points with not having a lot of personal content from Tommy throughout the season, but random detail, we found out Tommy was colorblind, and that sort of, that gave Dean that idol, essentially. I think had he not been colorblind, I don't think he confides in Dean and they don't go on that wild goose chase.
Yeah, I thought that was a very captivating part of the episode of what is Tommy going to do? And then brought Dean in. Dean's not sharing the information. So that was that whole sequence I thought was very fun.
Though it's interesting, it would have been really interesting if Nora hit all the machetes because it seemed like there were no less than two dozen machetes in the course of Island of the Idols. Like,
yeah.
Tommy's looking for a machete. And apparently there's a whole like mini mart of them that Rob and Sandra have collected over the course of the Island of the Idols.
Yes. So they were Hansel and Gretel of machetes of just left around the Island of the Idols to lead them down the path.
All right, we're going to leave you. Here's our home. Here's our knives drawer of machetes. Like, have fun with our chickens.
Yeah. Okay. Mike, I have to thank one other sponsor before we move on, and those are our friends over at Rothy's. And if you haven't heard about Rothy's, they are the company that's making stylish shoes for women and girls out of recycled plastic water bottles, and they're crazy comfortable and machine washable. Rothy's has grown to be the most loved, gotta have them brand, and it's no surprise they have over 1,000 nearly perfect reviews. Rothy's are the perfect everyday shoe for life on the go. They're stylish, comfortable, and they go with everything from yoga pants to dresses and skirts. They come in an ever-changing array of colors, prints, and patterns, and available in a range of styles like sneakers, loafers, points, and more. Rothy's are seamlessly knit using thread made from plastic water bottles. They are ultra comfortable. As soon as you slip them on, there's zero break-in period with these shoes. I feel like that Nora would like these.
Yeah, I think so. Or she'd hang them on a tribe flag if they're belonging to someone she didn't like.
Yeah, the DK Chillin might as well.
I'm gonna hide his shoes.
Rothy's always comes with free shipping and free returns and exchanges. No risk, no worries, no reason not to try. And it's going to blow your mind that they're made out of repurposed plastic water bottles. In fact, Rothy's has diverted over 35 million water bottles from landfills already. Rothy's owns and operates their manufacturing workshops. They prioritize sustainability every step of the way. They ship directly in their shoebox. No unnecessary packaging. They are the feel-good flats in more ways than one. The First Lady of Podcasting loves the Rothy's that she has. You will too. Check out all the amazing styles available right now at rothys.com/rob. Go to rothys.com/rob to get your new favorite flats, comfort, style, sustainability. These are the shoes you've been waiting for. Head to rothys.com/rob today. Okay. Mike, I touched on this with Steven on the know-it-alls last night, but the we had sort of like this unprecedented segment in the reunion show last night dealing with the inappropriate touching between Dan and Kelly and the female castaways this season, that Kelly had the opportunity to speak with Jeff on the reunion show. I just wanted to hear from you how you thought that that whole segment ended up playing out.
So, obviously, after last week, a lot of things were up in the air. And I think a lot of people, you know, even though action was taken on the Survivor show itself, people were looking for information, explanations, and I think ultimately culpability on behalf of Survivor as to how things went down. I personally feel like they accomplished that. And, you know, it also so happened that the night before the finale, CBS came out with an official statement that released very specific stipulations that are now going to be instituted in future seasons of Survivor as well, to make sure any sort of incidents of harassment or inappropriateness or making other contestants feel uncomfortable is going to, you know, obviously have a zero tolerance policy. And I think Jeff really represented that here it was really interesting to me how, you know, when he sat down with Kelly, the very first thing he said to her was, "You were right."
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I still think having resources available for the audience perspective would have been something nice. But I think at the same time, I'm glad that the focus was on Kelly.
Yeah.
Because I think that while people have reacted, she was the person who was first and foremost affected by this. And she needed the opportunity to speak about it.
Was it perfect? I'm sure there are ways that they could have improved on that. It was a pressure-packed situation. I think, you know, a very, you know, awkward situation for Kelly to be in.
And let me just say, like, my heart goes out to her for, I cannot imagine how tough that is.
Yeah.
To represent so many different people's stories that she's heard, that people have come forward about in light of these recent events, to have to speak on behalf of that in front of a live audience and to millions of people. Granted, again, it was not
live to tape.
It was live to tape, but at the same time, it's an extremely nerve-wracking situation to have that on your shoulders, and you could feel that. And it's so understandable, but I thought she did an excellent job vocalizing her own, you know, her own dissatisfaction with the way things were handled in the moment and her hopefulness and her optimism that this is going to result in actionable items, not only on the show, but hopefully for people outside as well.
Yeah. And to have Kelly in that situation up in front of the audience, you know, I really think that, you know, I don't think she would have done it if she was not comfortable with being put in that spot. I was wondering, maybe should they have taped this interview and then aired it at the finale and then got reactions to the, but I feel like then people might have said, oh, they taped it and they edited out what she really said. So I think it was sort of like a no-win situation to, you know, for the show, that if they, you know, even in terms of that they did the finale earlier, that people were saying, oh, they're going to edit out what she's going to say about the whole situation. So, yeah. They, you know, very tough situation. I really felt though, like in the room, you know, getting to, you know, I thought that having Kelly do the press after,
yeah.
you know, that was not, you know, in front of an audience and giving her the opportunity to say anything else that she thought about this situation. Of course, having Kelly involved with writing some of these new guidelines that are in place for Survivor. I just thought, because there was such a silence from the show about yep. that. And just going back to some of the interviews that Jeff had done with Dalton Ross over these last couple of weeks, where Jeff talked about privacy issues and we can't really get into it and we can't say anything, just for the show to sort of like be out in front of this and be able to say, okay, we have to get better at this. This is a, you know, this was a complete failure in terms of how we reacted to this situation. And then, you know, we will be, you know, on the lookout for this type of thing. And now we have policies in place to be able to move forward. It doesn't fix what was wrong with, right. with how this was handled. But what it hopefully does is prevent this type of a scenario from unfolding on a future season of this show or other shows.
Right. I mean, optimally, there would have been a time machine, you know, to be able to go back and you know, a myriad of things could have happened in the sliding doors of the world to mm-hmm. prevent this entire situation from happening. But we don't have that. And, you know, I'll repeat a point that I made before. I think people are still debating whether or not the events of the Merge episode were like a quote unquote real world issue or whether or not they were really just within the confines of the game. But that, to me, doesn't mean it can't be used to inform your own real world actions.
Mm-hmm.
Something that I've been really trying to reconcile with personally is, you know, when you see these horrible, you know, depressing actions on your TV screen, not just from Survivor, but in a number of ways, you could wallow in it. You can be angry at it, or you can do something about it in your own day to day. And I think, at least from my perspective, and I've heard about it from other people as well, that, you know, it's given me some new light as to, you know, the way that I view certain situations. And I think that it's something that has really helped a lot of people, not just, you know, those that have been unfortunately victims of this, but those that have been witnesses to it, or mm-hmm. those that have not even noticed it at first. And, you know, I know I think it's a little tough to call it a teaching moment just because, again, it is so negatively tinged and the trauma associated with it, it was palpable. But I am hopeful that both on the show and the conversations that are hopefully occurring, they're awkward and they're uncomfortable, but I think they're hopefully going to produce better behavior for, you know, even fans of the show in their daily lives.
Mm-hmm. All right. So with that being said, let's talk a little bit more about the actual live finale that we got to attend. And this is a question that is from one of our listeners about the earlier way that it was taped. Marsha has a question.
Hi, Rob. This is Marsha from Decatur, Georgia. I'm wondering how they kept the studio audience and all the contestants from leaking the results of the show with the taped delay. Thanks.
Okay. So I actually, I don't know if I haven't seen a lot on Twitter saying that the results were leaked. I basically was sort of like off Twitter. I wasn't following it super closely.
And by the time we were done with the red carpet, it was about 8:30 Eastern. So the episode had already been underway.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I would say here's a bit of a magic trick revealed. Tom Laidlaw was standing outside, and they threatened, you know, hey, if anybody discloses this, we're going to bring in this former NHL player, and you know, it's going to take you downtown in more ways than one.
Yeah, I loved, like, there were many shots I felt like of Tom Laidlaw, like, you know, just like wandering around. He looked like he did seem a little out of place. Yeah,
and
the finale,
and he was wearing like a t-shirt and jean, like next to Jason, who's like fully.
Don't mind me, I'm just. Wandering or milling about.
Well, speaking of, so I guess another, there were a few things obviously that, you know, since watching and seeing the way the camera cuts, there were things that might have been missed for those that were not on the stage. And speaking of the stage, one thing that people may have missed is as soon as Tommy wins, Tommy's dad, Mr. Sheehan, rushes the stage, runs up, pink jacket, and just bear hugs Tommy.
Yeah.
They show his family running up afterwards, but like, he made a dead sprint as soon as that final Tommy Boat came up.
Yeah, I think you can make him out on the show. They cut away, but you can come back. They come back in another shot. Tommy's dad is unmistakable.
Absolutely.
Sort of the business in the front, party in the back haircut.
Mm, yeah, I would say so. And he pulls it off. He wears it well. Well, speaking of wearing it well, also a member of the
Tom Laidlaw admires it.
Yeah, exactly.
It's good hockey hair.
If only I had any. This became the Sheehan crew. Someone was wearing a red wig, and you can actually see this when we cut back to the reading of the votes.
Yeah, it's like somebody's like waving it like the terrible towel.
Yeah, exactly. I think it's Tommy came for everyone's wigs, and I think they were trying to show that.
So just to go back to Marsha's question about how did they keep everybody in check, I don't know anything that was leaked, but Jeff did come out and then make like an impassioned plea to everybody that was in the room. So Jeff comes out and is like warming up the crowd, like hey everybody, we're here at the finale, and so. And Jeff opens with, this was the weirdest thing that happened during the entire day.
A very weird day.
So this was early.
Yeah, like, this we was just literally, sat down. This is like minute two, I think, that we had sat down.
We had just sat down and they confiscated everybody's phones.
Right.
So you were not able to take your phone out during the show and broadcast any of the results or anything like that. And so then they took everybody's phones away. So we're sitting there. And then Jeff comes out and he's like, hey, everybody, how's it going? He's like, yeah, we're here. It's Survivor 39 or the finale of our season. And I'm backstage and I'm in my dressing room and I'm looking at the monitor. And all I see is Cesternino's face right in the middle of my monitor.
You got razzed.
Yeah. I was like, wait, what?
People who saw, there's a little bit of like a Where's Waldo here, mm-hmm. but Rob and I happened to be seated like in a pretty central spot in the audience.
Sort of like dead center in the like second, like the, sort of like they have like the immediate families of like the people that are in the final five, like right in the front. And then other like, you saw like where Amber was.
Amber and
like
the Sandra's, Mariano girls.
Sandra's family.
And Krista.
And Krista, who was like shouting at the, like I ran into Krista Hasty on the way in. And then like I was seated and Krista Hasty like was like yelling up from like, oh my God, how do I have better seats than you? I'm like, you're Sandra's guest.
Krista was hugging Nora at one point, and I said, I could walk, so you could fly.
But I was just like, I was like, wait, hold on. Like, why is Jeff Probst singling me out of this crowd of 200 people?
But then when we were talking with, I think we talked with Chelsea and Jason later at the party, and they're like, yeah, we were looking backstage and like you guys were front and center.
Yeah, I don't know. Were they using me to focus the camera?
Exactly. Like you were all right. Let's white balance around Cesternino.
And I was like, oh, wait, does Jeff hate me or does Jeff is he teasing me?
Well, so this is the interesting thing, because as you mentioned, you were not the only alum in the room.
Mm-hmm.
So there was at one point, I think it was before the season 40 trailer reveal.
Yeah. So Jeff was sort of like getting set up and, that it was a weird finale because there was like, they were sort of like resetting and setting things up. And so there were like longer than normal commercial breaks. Like during when the episode aired, normally when you're at the live finale, they sort of like are on the same time as the TV show. Like, all right, we'll be back in 4 minutes and 30 seconds. It's a regular commercial break. This was sort of like they were like the act break would come and then like they'd start the episode again. You're a little like kind of DVRing the commercials a little bit. And so then in the taping of the reunion, there were longer breaks and Jeff was standing up there. And Jeff is really great with like the kid. Like Jeff is like really takes it seriously about like Survivor is, for families. And again, this season is kind of a weird season for that. But, hey, how many 7-year-olds do we have here? Jeff is like really catering to the 7-year-olds and this. Nothing that the 7-year-olds love more than super complicated gameplay with a million advantages.
Yeah, absolutely.
So anyway, Jeff was doing all right, who's got questions? Yep. Anyway, like a press conference time.
Essentially,
all right, who's got a question for me?
And so we see a hand shoot up from the back corner, like back corner in the in the nosebleed section. And he's like, yeah, you. And this woman stands up. She goes, Jeff, it's me, Timbertina.
Yeah.
The first boot, Timbertina Shear from Survivor Exile Island, was in the building.
Like, oh, my God, Timbertina.
And he's like, well, speaking of a woman with a machete, like, you'd hack anything down, wouldn't you?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, I mean, Nora versus Timbertina on a season.
And Timbertina's question was like, hey, when am I going to come back?
And the other big highlight.
Jeff was like, he sort of like, well, I was like, yeah. I said, that's a great question. We get
well,
so many.
That yeah. certainly had a question mark at the end of that statement. Who's next?
Yeah.
But the other big highlight was a kid stood up who Elaine talked about this during the loved one's visit with the aforementioned Rocket Hole. That, you know, she had two kids from a previous marriage, and the younger one was her best friend. And that kid stood up and he says, Jeff, just so you know, I'm coming for your job.
Yeah. So, one of the kids from Elaine's family is calling out Jeff Probst.
I could only imagine that, like that kid would want to wrestle Jeff Probst, right, for the title of host of Survivor. Concerned, like, I can't imagine what Elaine's day-to-day is, considering how wrestling, fanatic she was on the island. That, like, he's like, all right, let me get Probst in the ring. I'm gonna take him down. I'm gonna pin him. I'm gonna take that hat off of him.
Yeah. Jeff even had like some back and forth with Elaine, like during the finale. Like Jeff was getting ready to show the season 40 trailer, right. And he's like, this is always the awkward part where it's like, hey, like you guys were great, but like, we got another season for you. And so Elaine shouted out like to Jeff to the stage, like, Jeff, we got nothing for you. Like they were like, you know, mixing it up back and forth.
Yeah, it's again, it's a really nice full circle moment where I got to see the first challenge and Jeff and Elaine were getting into it from the very beginning. I will also say, you know, again, say what you want to about the result of the season, but I thought it was a pretty damn beautiful reaction when the results of the Sia money were revealed. And Elaine and Janet were so genuinely touched by that goodwill.
The Sia thing is getting wild.
So it's so interesting because this is the biggest example of a like Survivor dictatorship we've ever seen. Right. Mm-hmm. I know you're trying to break down the criteria, but it comes down to one person's whims. I know you say that people are going to try to be gunning for the Sia money, but it feels like it's an impossible mission to be like, all right, I got to play so that this one Australian pop star is going to love me enough to give me money. Like it feels just like,
I don't think you can play for the Sia money.
Absolutely not. I think Wendy proved that, you know, so it's just a matter of like, it's either who you are or what you're able to do. But I think, like, we cannot game it. Mm-hmm. I really don't think we can. This is Calvin Ball right now. Mm-hmm. Just when we think we have something pinned down, then it's going to, another piece of criteria is going to pop up. We just have to sort of enjoy the ride for what it's worth. And I guess thank the charity. But like, I think Sia also said, wasn't it a birthday present to herself that she gave
Jeff
money?
Said that this was, I guess it was Sia's birthday. And this was a birthday present to herself. I mean, could they interview Sia and ask her about, I guess she doesn't like the press attention. She just likes giving money away.
Well, that's the thing. Because she pulled a Tommy. She was the prototype of Tommy's father. And that remember when she bum rushed the stage during the Ko Rong finale.
For Ty.
Yeah, for Ty. Yeah. And so I think that, and also, yeah, it looks like she was born December 18th, 1975. So indeed, it was her birthday yesterday.
Happy birthday, Sia.
Happy birthday, Sia. I'd love to see it. But I think that, you know, maybe she sort of has shied away from it. But yeah, it's so interesting how it's become a formality at this point, you know?
How hilarious would it be if I ever played again and that I got the Sia money? So I just find that to be, even if it was like $10 from Sia, like I got like the Randy check.
Yeah,
from Sia.
You can get stuff in the vending machine on the way out, courtesy of Sia.
I think that just be so hilarious.
It's so interesting. And I think, you know, I think there, unfortunately, the stratification of it is not a great look of like, hey, Jamal, here's 15,000. But like these other two get 100,000. Like, I'm not necessarily liking the tiers of giving on Sia's behalf, because again, that just muddles the thing more.
Yeah, that the $100,000 Sia prize was given for the first time ever to Rick Devens last season. And so I don't know if that's like a new, like Sia's favorite player of the season. I'm not sure if there's some sort of like if, you know, if there's like a moment that a person has, maybe that's a 15k, and then if you're Sia's favorite player of the season, you get 100,000, and maybe there was two, she couldn't break the tie between Janet and Elaine.
So
this
it
season.
Sounds like Sia made her own version of fire tokens is what you're saying, right? Like you have these moments, you're
this
gonna...
season we'll have a new Sia tokens. The player who collects the most will get the most Sia money at the finale.
Yeah, it's like cashing out of a casino, right? You have a certain amount of chips. You can bet them if you want to, but that just means less money from Sia at the end.
Sia Island. Survivor 41. See you later.
I just love, and I would love the giant bust of Sia on the. Can we talk, by the way, about?
Does she have like the full like mask or wig on? From
that's
the,
where they live. That's where the shelter is built.
Yeah, they got it from Tommy's family. They got the Sia wig.
Can we talk about the beginning of the finale? A rap on Rob and Sandra. Such an interesting way to begin this finale.
The Rob and Sandra stuff was so wacky, and not in the wacky. Like, I would have expected if you would have, interviewed me on, September 27th and said, all right, what's going on with Rob and Sandra in the finale? Like, I would have said, I would have had completely different worst fears about the season. But I would have said, Rob and Sandra are, key cogs of the final tribal council. They're sort of, mentoring the jury, they're doing they're voting, who knows. That if you gave me 10 choices of what's gonna happen, I wouldn't have said that Rob and Sandra are gonna sort of open up Central Perk style on Island of the Idols, clink glasses,
but you would think cheers. You would think again, Jeff usually does the recap of everyone's game. You would think that they would do that. No, they're talking about their own experiences on the show. Hey, I found my wife here. Wasn't that fun? Mm-hmm. Be great to see her again, wouldn't it?
Yeah, and Sandra had the great line of and I found my something that I love also, the money that I won.
Just really equal measure. But it was so strange. Like you said, they clink glasses and then they essentially sublet IOI to them, right?
Yeah. Well, first they gave out commemorative Final Five buffs.
Are these Beanie Babies now?
Yeah. The first five survivors in attendance will get their commemorative Island of the Idols buffs. And then from there, all right, that's a wrap. We're out of here.
Yeah, and they sort of...
We got a plane to catch.
There was a lot of postulating as to, would these two eventually take over the hosting role? But, they might have to face off against Elaine's son here because, the beginning... felt like a veritable example of that, right? Where they're talking about you guys only have 3 days more, only one of you is going to win. It sort of felt like a pep talk that Jeff would usually give.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So they got the cold open. Let me give you a question that we got on Twitter from Daniel Fowler, who says, is it possible Rob and Sandra filmed season 40 at the same time they filmed season 39, just on the other side of the island? They were hardly involved for season 39. Will previous winners be fed better than a typical season of Survivor?
So you think they're part-time?
Yeah. Is it possible? Were they actually playing season 40? And were they moonlighting at the same time? And then on the off day, hey, guys, we got a thing.
Can I also mention, by the way, your Boston Rob impression, I've noticed, is the most polite of your impressions. Considering that it always starts out with Rob saying, hey, always introducing himself.
Yeah.
Hello. Nice to meet you.
It will be very formal. Yep. I ran into Rob very briefly yesterday at the taping.
I can assume he greeted you.
Yes. Yeah. So hey, how you doing? I ran into Rob real quick. I also had a 2-second interaction with Amber.
Right.
Who I haven't seen Amber in 13 years.
Yeah, it wasn't since the two Robs, two Jennas, right?
No, I mean that was before I even played in Survivor All-Stars.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so this was, I saw them probably a couple times in, 2005 or whatever. I was walking out to go when I got up, there's times you get up to go to the bathroom. And so I was walking, back to where the press area was to go to the bathroom. And then Amber was walking through with the girls. And she was hey, Sister Nino.
You were getting it from all sides in this finale, between Jeff coming out and then the Marianos just coming from both sides.
But she did start with a hey.
Yeah, I think that's the moniker of always say hey.
Yeah. Winners at War, Mike.
I cannot believe this is a thing.
Yeah,
I'm
really excited. I'm really excited. But you know what? Because I have not been, I know a lot of people when like the cast was leaked. They went like people went crazy.
Yeah.
I feel like I am good at compartmentalizing, and I said, okay, this is a thing that's happening, but I'm not gonna go crazy until we get there. I've got you know, Big Brother going on. I've got Survivor 39 going on. I sort of
slow down that train. Woo!
Woo! But I am like I sort of like I am not sick of talking about it because I have resisted getting into it, and now I feel like that this is like, ooh, I get to really, you know, open this present.
Yeah, exactly. You saved the present until Christmas Day. You didn't do like the advent calendar of like,
not like my kids, like, let me open everything in sight. And then, you know, now we're bored.
Well, that's the thing. Actually, it's sort of tangentially like the Dean's game, because again, well, I was super flashy and really impressive from an entertainment perspective. I think the point that Tommy made in terms of like, you did nothing with them was very reminiscent of like, Dean's the guy who collects the vintage action figures, but like doesn't take them out of the box.
Mm-hmm.
And Tommy's the guy who like makes stop motion videos with them, you know, like, well, he didn't need them, but like people want, what I've seen alumni vocalize is like, they don't just want to know that you have the toys. They want to see what you do with them. And I feel like in this case, well, it was impressive.
I don't know if I Janet out of the game.
Right. But I think that just as much fun as Mama Look at Me Now was with him having all the adornment of all the advantages, the fact that people said, like, yeah, you didn't do anything with it. Like, I actually do wonder in a separate set of circumstances, like, if he uses his idol and he plays it on somebody like Lauren, for example, like, does that earn him some goodwill?
Did he not make the most use out of, like, he had the stuff. Did he use it, you know, economically?
Right. I mean, look at someone like Wendell, who had immunity at the Final Five and bought a lot of goodwill with Laurel by using the idol on her to the point where she won him the game. She cast the winning vote. And so, that could have been a missed opportunity. I mean, I think Dean did a good job pitching, at least with that stuff of like, look what I was able to collect. I think it's just a matter of not just, you know, bullet points on a PowerPoint presentation. It's also the delivery that you manage it with.
You know, when Dean was showing all the things that he had and telling them to the jury, so he did talk about, you know, the legacy advantage,
which I was very excited.
He brought this out. I was very excited. So let me play this clip. This was Dean introducing the legacy advantage into the final travel.
So 9 and 6, I was safe right here. This is real. Jamal, is it?
Like, it's, this is a little bit of that, like 9 and 6. This is real.
Jamal,
this is real.
Please validate.
Jamal, is it? Jamal?
Jamal?
Bueller?
Nothing.
Jamal? Well, it's real, right? It's real. Tell me, that's a real legacy advantage. So this is what Jamal says in the moment.
That is not real, Dean.
I did think that Jamal missed an opportunity to deliver the perfect response in this situation, which was,
that is not an advantage.
Absolutely. And I believe actually Jamal said he was in the running at one point for Triple H. So it, like, again, all of it would have coalesced into one form.
Now, this explanation from Jamal is great.
So I went to Island of the Idols, and given to me was a blank piece of parchment with a pencil. And it was up to me to decide how I wanted to use that in any way I wanted to use it.
Cool.
So,
cool. I mean, Dean.
Okay. All right. Cool.
Yeah. Dean was Jake Peralting it. He's like, cool, 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 cool. And, like, and the inside is just like, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God.
Yep. But I saw Jamal last night. I said this to him when I saw him, that I thought that it was, this is like such a Jamal thing of that, okay, You could have just made Dean look like a stupid idiot,
right?
Or like, no, you moron. Yeah. It was not real. But this is what he does, and this is what's so great about Jamal.
It has no power in the game, but this is actually pretty awesome. What Dean is doing is he's saying he didn't even need to use it,
right,
and he's showing it to us as though it could have been real,
right,
and that's pretty awesome.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I love Dean be like, yeah, exactly. Yep, that's exactly what I was doing.
Yeah. I mean, that this was great. And this is like my, you know, one of my sons like gives me a piece of paper that says CAT. And he's like, Dad, this spells dog. And I was like, well, it's actually pretty awesome that you wrote the name of a pet on the paper. It's a different pet. This spells cat, which is different, but it's still a pet and it's still a word. And that was still really awesome. Good
effort,
job.
The effort was there. What I thought was really interesting about this final tribal council, and the reason why, again, I felt it was more even-handed than other ones, is because I felt the jury did a lot of, like, thinking out loud on behalf of the contestants. Mm-hmm. Because, again, when we got to the Elaine moment of, like, Nora, I don't think you had a strategy, then you had people being like, well, no, I think that it was part of her social game, which was a strategy to make these close bonds and be transparent to people. So, like, I think it almost became like a jury roundtable.
Yeah.
From Big Brother of, like, let's discuss the pros and cons of these people and also give those people an opportunity to sort of interject. But once those thunder clouds clapped, like, mayhem ensued for a hot second.
MVP of the jury, Mike.
Ooh, that's a tough one. I mean, Jamal, for, like, being able to be amicable. I mean, Missy is the gift queen.
Mm-hmm.
I think, you know, they tried to make keep eating the popcorn going. Ooh, this
is the final tribal council.
I think she did. She was one of those people, I think, that was, like, really speaking on Nora's behalf.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess.
How about this? MVP of the final tribal council.
Dean.
No, I'm the jury.
Oh, the jury.
Most of MVJ.
MVJ. I don't know. I'm trying to, like, really parse out, you know, who said what. I think Lauren and Janet were both, like, very to the point.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think they really allowed Tommy to be open and honest with them.
Kelly said a lot on the jury.
Kelly was good. I think Kelly started off things really well of, like, hey, like, she was a good foreperson. Mm-hmm. I think, even though Jack was technically, I think she did a good job of being like, all right, let's start without Wit. Like, here, describe your strategy.
He opened it up, and then he was rather invisible for the rest of the finale.
Yes, in more ways than one. Name dropped, but invisible.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then least valuable juror, who got the least amount of airtime from the jury?
Aaron got shouted down by the rest of the jury.
Yeah, Aaron was like, hey, Tommy, like, don't, you know,
and everyone's
you have
like,
to bring him down.
Like, no. I want to hear what he's talking about.
Yes. Yeah. Keep going with that. Karishma was pretty invisible up until that point where
the rain drenched moment when she's like, Dean, you're sitting there and I'm not. Yeah. We had an alliance.
I love Karishma dragging Dean.
You're a little punk. Yeah, again, that's a great storyline as well of, like, Krishma and Dean not getting along, and then it comes full circle where, like, she has the last word here of like, throwing Dean under the bus. Aye. Nora.
I-O-I. Okay.
So we were talking about winners at war.
Well, yes. All right. Winners at war. How about this? Let me tie the two things together.
Yeah.
Tommy Sheehan shows up day one, winners at war.
Mm.
How do you think that he would fare? Give me your prediction. Do you think does he end up doing well because of the type of social game that he had? Or do you feel like that because, you know, you have players that were burned by, say, like a Russell Hantz in the past of like, somebody new is here. We didn't vote him out right away. And he ends up going far. Is that too much for, you know, I know Rob and Sandra know who Tommy is.
Right. So
even though Sandra asked Tommy's name, what's your name?
Yeah, I love Sandra trying to, like, play it cool. We haven't been sitting in a booth the entire time.
Why? Why do they have to play it cool?
Listen,
and Tommy is Tommy like, wait, hold on. How do you know my name?
Wait a minute.
Hold on. Wait, you guys have been watching every tribal council? This change. Yeah, I guess nothing's changed.
Yeah, exactly. Wait, what were you saying about Dean flexing? You're making fun of me the entire time? What's going on?
Aye.
Cool. Yeah. So I think the interesting thing, what I'm predicting about season 40 is it's very interesting that we just finished with a very social winner for season 39, because I inherently feel like season 40 is going to be so cutthroat. And I think Jeff actually talked about this with Game Changers, right? About like, all these sharks in the water, and ended up with a very sharky winner in Sarah Lucina.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like,
but she was not somebody that people thought of as a shark.
Right. But I think at this point, I think everyone's guards are going to be up to the extreme. And granted, this cast, this 39 cast, was a very game oriented cast to the point where there was so much calamity going on. I think that definitely, unfortunately, blurred the lines a bit when it came to the events of the merge. But this is going to be, you know, people who have won the game before due to being cautious or in some cases being overly audacious. But I think they're going to be just so wary of everybody else that I can't imagine someone like Tommy coming in and being like, I'm going to charm them. Mm-hmm. You know, I think at this point they're like, yeah, like, great, I'll get to know you and your now fiance, but like, I don't really need to get to know you. Like, what are you really up to? What's your ulterior motive? Whereas I feel like Tommy's benefit, everyone else didn't feel like he had an ulterior motive.
Yeah, I feel like that season 40 is going to really be about who do you trust?
I completely agree. And look, there's also a number of like relationships from not only previous seasons that people have played together, but also since the Survivor community is so entrenched and some of these people have been in the community for years, there are bonds that build through that regard as well. And we've seen in the past that pregame alliances can sometimes get thrown out the window, but could it go an All Survivor All-Stars route where when, you know, real life bonds get in the way and that gets involved in the game, how does that fare?
And it's who do you trust, but also that don't forget where we are in the advantage era. I would expect there to be many advantages, many idols in the game coming up this season. And I wonder how much so, you know, who do you trust? I think tends to lead to more pagongings, pregame alliances of people like three or four people who are on the phone ahead of time.
Right.
The winners, I think, were probably able to suss out very early that they're okay. Oh, it's all winners. Okay. It's me, you, you, and you, and we're working together and that's it. But now I wonder if maybe the advantages and the idols might end up helping the show in terms of, is that a way to sort of break up more of these pregame alliances? Now, again, they could, all the advantages and idols could fall into the hands of the pregame alliances and end up helping to steamroll. But is it possible that we end up where we're able to, you know, have the people that are on the bottom be able to sort of like thwart a big, group? What was it in Game Changers where was just the one side Nuku?
Yeah, it was like especially at the merge, it was like that like Ty, Brad Culpepper, Troy Zan, you know, Debbie, Sierra, Dawn Thomas sort of coalition. Here's a question for you in terms of advantages. Based on what happened at the end of this season, are we seeing the idol nullifier next season?
You know, I'm really of two minds. I thought like when Janet was talking about it yesterday, I'm like, yeah, it shouldn't be in the game until the final five. But I know like Dr. Mike talked about how, and I'm looking forward, I want to ask Dr. Mike this on the Twitch this weekend,
right,
about how, he would say like, Ben had too many idols. Mm. We needed an idol nullifier.
Yeah, it's interesting. My personal issue with the idol nullifier being used this time around was I think it was introduced too late. I think the interesting thing about when it was being used in David versus Goliath was, okay, Carl found it at the swap, right? And he could have used it, you know, he had a bunch of time to figure out when to use it. Dean found it at Final 7 and said, well, there's only two more opportunities to play idols, so I know when to use it. It was less of a risk to inherently use it. Janet told me, like, no matter, you know, who, no matter what happened, I was being nullified if there was a nullifier in the game because nobody wanted me to get to 4. Mm-hmm. And so I think my issue as well with these finales is, I don't know, I don't like seeing advantages played on top of each other in finales. I don't know what it is from like my own personal mind break, but maybe it's because we're doing so much in finales that it infinitely complicates things more when you're like, here's an advantage, here's another advantage. And, you know, then we end up with a Cerie type of situation, but
which was at 6.
Yeah, which was at 6, which was in a finale though, you know, where it felt like we were just piling. We were essentially playing like a game of Uno where it was like, okay, I got the reverse it. I've got the +2. Where it feels like, I don't know, a bit too mind cluttering as opposed to like something, I would say, quote unquote, simpler of playing two idols at the final 6 in Survivor Cambodia. It feels like a different story than let's mix and match all these advantages in one round, especially so late in the game.
Yeah, it's tricky, you know.
And I will say Janet looked splendid and was received splendidly last night. I mean, it was really heartwarming to talk to her as well. And she could feel the warmth coming from the crowd, like they were all there for her. I mean, you got to talk to her for the first time. Like, she's an awesome person.
I got to talk to Janet. I feel like that Lauren seems like that she's really great and, you know, very fun to talk to. I think that she's somebody that I don't know if the show knew enough of what to do with her and her story, because I feel like that she is a really fun character. But I think that then, I think that she was so attached to at the hip with Tommy, and then ultimately he's the winner of the season.
Right. And because we have these situations before where it's like, oh, well, X person actually would have won. It wasn't in the edit, but like had they gone to the end, they would have won. And I feel like they tried to do that this time. We saw a couple times of like, we can't take Lauren because we know that Lauren's going to win. And I will say, from an editing perspective, you know, I think we have
Laura said Lauren's the queen.
Yeah. And she even did the shark fin, you know, the thing that the queens wear. But I think that, you know, we certainly have had our quibbles with the editing in terms of, again, I really did not like, that a woman will win scene. That might have also been a consequence of maybe the makeup of the editing room. But I think that what I will commend the season for is at least like we got to know a little bit from everybody. it really did. It wasn't necessarily like anybody can win, but it at least felt like we got to see enough of people. I know that confessionals don't necessarily dictate an edit, but I felt like it was pretty even across the board in terms of content, even from the pre-mergers.
I mean, there's nobody for the season. I know people started with early on Purple Dean. Right. I don't think we had anybody that we would have classified as, you know, a purple character that we did not get to know. There was nobody that ended up, you know, not being fully formed in terms of like, yeah, there were people that, you know, Ronnie and Molly, we didn't see a lot of, but they were only in a couple episodes.
And it felt like everyone had a story. Mm-hmm. You know, it didn't feel like that scenario of like, okay, why did this person go? And I think, unfortunately, a consequence of really erratic gameplay in seasons like Ghost Island and Edge of Extinction is like, it really feels like resetting the deck each and every episode of like, okay, who voted for who and why did they vote this way? I felt like there was at least a strategic narrative throughout. I feel like from a story narrative, you asked with Christian, what's the story of this season? I think we're still trying to figure that out, especially amidst all the controversy that occurred from it and how that I think really clouds everything, especially again, it not really being mentioned in the outright finale episode. But I do feel like at least from a character based perspective, I think we got to know a little bit of everybody. And again, as someone who really enjoyed this cast, I do appreciate that. What did you think about, I mean, I don't want to get too into the edit stuff, but like the Tommy winner edit, was it too much of the community buying into Tommy? Was it that it was too much of like a typical winner edit? Why do you think so many people were on to Tommy?
I thought it was too much. I mean, you know, I saw it, you know, I don't like to, you know, unlike some people I podcast with, put it out there on Twitter, because I feel like it's almost like you're sort of like, if you're right, you know, if you're wrong, you're dumb, you look like an idiot. And if you're right, you know, you're, you know, potentially ruining the season for people.
Right.
So, you know, I don't like to really, you know, call it out when I see it, but I just was like, boy, there are a lot of, and I would say if I was gonna like really put my finger on what it is, it's sort of like he is the person that is narrating the strategy of the show, like the person who is sort of like getting confessionals that are not funny or interesting,
right?
They're just sort of like, here's the plan of what's happening, or like, hey, we're at the merge and that means it's time to kick my, even, you know, when Dan was like, well, I got to get back to thinking about the game, you know, so it's just the stuff like that I feel like that those are the, you know, the things that are the most telling.
Right. And I think even Tommy would agree with that. I mean, it's always tough. I still think Survivor's
like uncolorful confessional that color, are very
colorblind confessionals.
That are just simply, you know, descriptive for the sake of, you know, just helping to tell the story.
And especially compared to such big characters, this was a very character heavy season. And I think that unfortunately it sort of paled in comparison. And I think Survivor's also
like Tommy himself.
Yeah. And I think Survivor's still trying to figure out also how to showcase a social game. Again, that's sort of where I go back to the Michelle comparison.
Yeah,
too.
And that's something I think also that I believe that Kara Kay talked about in David versus Goliath, where, you know, social players and Mike White also of that's hard to show, especially in the Advantage era with 20 people. And then there's the Island of the Idols. And so like Ethan's on to go back to Winners at War. Super social player.
Amazingly.
And,
yeah.
And nobody, when Ethan won, was like, oh my God, Ethan, boring winner.
Right.
What did he do? Except
for that one Survivor Sucks poster that was like, I saw the cross in the first episode. Yeah,
but it wasn't like, oh, where were his big moves that he, you know, it was so boring. People loved Ethan. He was a beloved figure. Maybe the, you know, one of the most beloved Survivor winners of all time. And people, you know, all these years later, are, you know, super thrilled that he is coming back onto the show. And Tommy, because we were just sort of like told, like, oh, I love Tommy. But we didn't get to see, you know, necessarily like the moments of like the bonding moments that players had, because there just wasn't room for it in all these episodes, because we're so jam packed with, OK, we got to go to the Island of the Idols. We got to, you know, we got to, you know, look for idols and deal with advantages. And there's also 20 people. So I think it's easier to showcase a social game on a season with 16 players and not a lot of other extracurricular activities going on.
And I feel like, you know, they did showcase some more camp life stuff. And again, I think that's due to the comedic potential of the cast and just like the characters that were involved. But I wonder.
Like, give me an example. What was something that was camp life?
Let's do Elaine in the first episode swinging from like Tarzan from a tree and talking about Grey Poupon, you know?
Yeah, but that's not necessarily like camp life. I feel like that's sort of like a funny thing that happened as opposed to sort of like, you know, the bonds between, you know, the different players that are out there. Like, I feel like if something is funny, I feel like they're still going to show you something that's funny.
Right. So I guess maybe if they focused more on like, here's Tommy and I'm actually very surprised we didn't have a scene of like Tommy and Lauren sitting down and connecting.
Yeah, Tommy,
you know?
And Lauren having, you know, a conversation about, you know, their fan, like something.
Well, because I mean, what Lauren described to me is it's really interesting because I think Tommy and Lauren might be like the two most dichotomous people almost on the season.
Right. And I feel like that seems like an easy one for Survivor to say, hey, this game brings together like, you know, back when like, oh, Lex and Big Tom would never Rudy and Rich. They would never be, Roger and Elizabeth.
They pass each other on the street and like not even give each other a second glance.
These people are from, you know, different worlds, but they end up, they're close allies.
Right.
And so I feel like that they, you're telling me like Tommy and Lauren didn't have like one like interesting or emotional conversation,
which Lauren told me about like the time then they actually agreed to work together. It was like raining in the shelter and she like pulled him aside of like, nobody's caring about us, like we need to look out for each other. And that would have been awesome to watch.
Mm-hmm.
Especially again,
and we got that more with, you know, with Dominic and Wendell.
Exactly.
It's not like it's totally...
It's not unfathomable.
Unfathomable, yes. Is it replicable is the question.
Exactly. Could it be replicable? So like I think that's still something that needs to be sought out. I mean, the storytelling, suffice it to say, it was a weird season overall. And I'd love to ask, you know, I guess, your overall thoughts about the season at the moment. But I think that the storytelling, unfortunately, sort of contributed to it, where I think there were fun moments and fun narratives. But I think we're still left a little wondering, like, okay, a lot of interesting stuff happened. We're still trying to sort of parse out, like, how it happened
mm-hmm.
or why it happened.
Could you do the process of, could you take the, you know, the Dan and Kelly situation? If you could somehow, amputate that off of the season.
Nora will give the bad news about that, right?
Yeah, and put it aside. Is it even possible to, if you could look at this season in a vacuum of, okay, Dan isn't cast on this season, or that this doesn't end up happening in the filming of the show, and we end up getting the rest of the season plays out as it did. I feel like that other than sort of like the Kelly ends up getting voted out because of it. And of course, like, you know, Janet is on the outs because of it. But could you imagine this season without that? And then how would we view this season?
Yeah. So first, I want to say, like, we mean no offense in, you know, pulling the situation out. It's just merely perspective. We don't want to necessarily say like, oh, that wasn't, we don't want this to be a part of the season, because I think it was impactful
well,
in many ways.
Yeah, we don't want this to be part of any season.
Right. Well, yeah, absolutely. I agree with that.
Yeah.
But I mean, to your point, I still think the pre-merge might be like an all-timer. I think there was so much going on in terms of chaotic votes,
yeah,
comedic
moments. I don't think I'd say all-timer, but it was a good pre-merge.
I think especially for a modern season where there's so much going on.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like we got to know a little bit about almost everybody, which is good. Merge episodes, obviously, were probably some of the darkest episodes in Survivor history.
Certainly.
And the post-merge, it's interesting because, and you were talking about this with Christian, if you look at the results, the post-merge is actually kind of fine. You know, you look at essentially like a Lyro pagonging with Dean sort of worming his way at the end. But I felt like the episodes themselves had at least interesting content in there. You know, and maybe it's due to the strength of the cast. Maybe it's due to all the twists that got thrown in. But, you know, I think that there was interesting stuff at least going on in each episode. So I would say, I think at the end, it would probably balance out to like a middle tier season. I am really, really intrigued to rewatch this season.
Mm-hmm.
Because I personally, this is a very big hot take, but I think when you evaluate Survivor seasons against each other, they need to be watched at least twice.
Okay.
I think there's a fundamental, and you can speak to this, I think there's a fundamental difference between watching it week to week and watching it in a binge when you know who the winner is. There's a different sort of, there's different things you pick up on. And I think that looking at it from both perspectives gives you a different perspective on things. Some seasons are much worse on a rewatch. Some are much better.
I think that Tommy's game is going to age a lot better.
I think
3 years from now, and I'm we have at least a couple of women winning the game, and we then sort of like restore balance to
the force.
You know, maybe three seasons in a row women win or whatever, and we can go back and we look at Tommy's game, and I think we're looking at it under a different prism. You know, so much over the course of the season I talked about how Ghost Island really shaped this season. I do wonder maybe if, because people felt like, what was the complaint during Ghost Island? Oh, who's going to stop Dominic and Wendell? Dominic and Wendell are on like this trajectory to the end. And yeah, it was going to be a great, photo finish with Laurel breaking the tie. But oh, so frustrating. Nobody was making a move. We kind of had that with Tommy and Lauren. And I wonder, maybe did the show really, you know, hide Tommy and Lauren's games more? Because so we don't say, oh, well, it's so obvious that Tommy and Lauren are going to the end and nobody's going to stop them and they're never going to turn on each other and it's so boring. And then why doesn't so-and-so make a move? Why doesn't Nora make a move?
Now we're starting to see, because again, I think Shannon Gantz had a great tweet about this a couple weeks ago. Like, I think clearly this was sort of a separation between audience perception and contestant perception. We're saying like, it's so obvious that Tommy, was running things behind the scenes. Why is nobody seeing it? And I think it's because, and again, maybe your deep dives can enlighten this, I think he was seen as Lauren's number two. And I think that maybe the story of Tommy's game is that he was able to, in a franchise that's become more and more about the tall poppy strategy, right? About like, hey, someone's sticking out, let's cut him down because they might be a threat at the end. Tommy was great at like really making himself medium. You know, like he was never particularly amazing at one thing besides relationship building. And so as a result, like, except for those couple of times when like Missy was gunning for him, nobody was looking at him as like, well, Tommy's a big person at this, so we need to get rid of him. You know, to the point where he was able to get into an endgame where you have like Elaine, Janet, and Lauren all go out in a row because they're the much bigger endgame threats, and then he's left sitting there in the end. And so I think it's a really interesting strategy of sort of working that middle level in terms of threats. But yeah, I totally agree. I guess what you're sort of implying is, I guess when the next cycle comes around with new contestants, how are they going to receive Island of the Idols? Because I also think that a lot of the frenetic gameplay came from Ghost Island and people saying like, I don't want to make things stagnant, because when things are stagnant, that means that like I could be in a worse position. And I want to make sure I'm always, looking out for things that might be happening on the horizon. Could we see another swing back in the other direction of like people made big moves too early? And, then they suffered for it. So let me make sure that I count my chickens before they hatch.
Yeah. No, I do think that Tommy's game plan was very smart, especially for somebody that's coming in with sort of like the threat level that he had of being somebody who is seen as an athletic guy who was, tall, had a great backstory. Nicole saw that, my Nicole, and she said, oh, that's the winner. And
I was going to say, his Nicole saw it as well, which is why they're engaged.
I guess so. She saw it right away, and I'm like, well, it's too obvious. That's too obvious. They're going to suss that out. But he did a really great job of diminishing his threat level. The Tommy and Lauren partnership, we weren't in those conversations. We don't know whether, who was, if it was 60-40 one way.
In the marriage of convenience, who was the alpha and who was the beta.
Or if it was 50-50 one way. But I think that part of Tommy's strategy was that I think that he was perfectly fine to have everybody look at Lauren is the person who's running things. And we have no idea to what degree was.
To the point where he went to Nora and said, like, no, like, I'm feckless at fire. Like, take me, like, because I'm not going to be able to beat Lauren.
It served him well, whether that was the case or not, to have it be set up that, okay, Lauren is the person who's running things. And then also then going back around telling people, which it does not seem like Lauren was doing, like, hey, we got to take out Lauren. No, we can't stop Lauren. Okay, you got to, I can't do it, but I need somebody else to take the shot on Lauren and win the immunity and put her into the fire. And then ultimately, that's how we're going to get around Lauren. So he sort of like propped up Lauren. And, Lauren, we probably have to, get into the deep dives to talk about, Lauren is like, hey, this is great for me. I'm building up my resume. Everybody knows that I'm the person that they have to beat. But also Tommy, I think, was also then going around telling people like, hey, like, we gotta knock out Lauren.
Lauren's building up a resume. She's the one to beat,
Right.
So I think it's a lot about, setting up your end game. Mm-hmm. And I think that that's whether through coincidence or through a series of events, Tommy was able to do that. So I think it's really interesting from that regard. But I can completely understand, going back to the rewatch question, why people would not, you know, want to go back and watch this anytime soon. It dealt with some very, very uncomfortable material that was not dealt in the best way possible, and in a storytelling style that that was also not done in the best way possible. And I could absolutely understand, you know, why people feel this is a bottom tier season right now. And I think it's also possible to say, like, this is a great cast, but a bottom tier season.
Yeah.
But I'm interested to reinvestigate it, because I would not be surprised in rewatching the season if I personally am like, okay, this could be like a middle tier season, or maybe like a middle to bottom season, just depending on, you know, your view of things.
Yeah. Okay. Mike, we're going to start to wrap this up today. And anything else you want to talk about, I guess, as we sort of like start to close the book on Survivor 30, and it's still going to do This Week in Survivor with Dr. Mike and Jordan Kalish, as we start to now begin to turn, like, take the finger and turn the page to season 40. Anything else you want to highlight?
So I want to say two things, I guess, one to you and one on behalf of you. It's a weird preposition to use. But I guess the thing to you is, I want to speak personally and say thank you, because I know how difficult this was for you. I know that you said this is probably the most difficult time you've had talking about Survivor, because I mean, to quote another reality TV show contestant, Survivor is supposed to be fun and good. And this was an opportunity to really broach subjects that were not fun and good. But I feel like the opportunity you had to be able to bring on people, whether it was through a voicemail or through guests, to sort of voice their own experiences and what Survivor means to them and what these events mean to them, it was crucial. I think in a time where people wanted their voices to be heard, you were able to provide them with that. I think it meant to so many people, it just meant so much for you to be able to do that.
Well, I really appreciate that, Mike. And I've really just been trying to find my way through this saga, because, you know, that this was supposed to be fun. That's right. You know, we started watching Survivor because it's fun. And for the most of the time, with a couple of, you know, notable exceptions, you know, Survivor is fun to watch. And then it's also fun to do a podcast about. And then, you know, this was like sort of, a blindside on us to, you know, end up having these real world things ending up coming into the shows. And so I've been very lucky that we had a lot of great people to lean on and have them on the show to help talk about this. And then also to be able to sort of like also do this other duty, you know, to then, talk about the show.
Yeah.
At the same time.
Yeah. And I think that's the thing as well, is that I think what you were also able to do is like, still make this a positive experience, you know, still be able to find things to talk about where, yes, you did treat things seriously, but there were still, you know, moments that you could talk about, things you were able to pull out and be like, you know, let's you know, remember these moments as well. Let's not sit in the darkness too much and, you know, turn on a light. And I guess that segues also into, you know, I guess what I want to say on behalf of you, I guess, to the fans in terms of coverage. And I guess, you know, I'm speaking on behalf of you and Dalton Ross and Gordon Holmes and, you know, Josh for the first few weeks as well, that, I mean, this was a tough season to cover for all of us. And I think, you know, this was probably, at least from my perspective, when I really noticed, you know, all of us are talking from a voice of a straight white male who might not necessarily have gone through, even with the Jack and Jamal stuff, you know, like issues that were not necessarily coming from our perspectives. And I hope that we were able to provide a platform for people to give their own perspectives. These are very complicated issues, as you've even shown with the merge episode stuff. There are numerous thoughts and complications involved in everything that happened here and everything that is going on. And I hope that we were able to provide sort of a blank slate for people to talk about and feel like their opinion was represented. I think the last thing any of us wanted to do was feel like people's voices were not being heard. And so, look, I know, I don't know if people even care about like the dinky coverage that I did all season long, but I know that's something that we all really heavily considered. And I hope Survivor fans, like we all got through this together, and I hope we were able to serve as a way, someone you can refer to when you know you want to talk more about this stuff, and you want to hear more from people who have been through this and speak from their own experiences, because as I mentioned before, it has absolutely opened my eyes, and hopefully it's opened a lot more people's eyes as well.
Okay, Thank you for saying that, Mike. I really appreciate it. It's been so much fun to have you here for the last couple of days.
Oh, absolutely. Like, listen, Dominic and I were paying Beyblades before. Anthony was serving me cracker milkshakes at McDonald's all morning yesterday. So I have
those are milkshakes that taste like crackers.
Yes. Yeah, that's very true. And I've had so much fun here. We have something coming in a couple of weeks that I think was a lot of fun as well that I'm excited for people to.
What's that?
So we are doing a best of 2019.
I mean, you said a couple of weeks. It's going to come like in like three days.
No, I don't know. It's December 19th right
now. I'm gonna release that. So yeah, Mike and I have a one of our infamous brand steal simulations coming, which is going to be, you know, I last year we did a happy holidays versus Merry New Year.
Yeah, it was like Merry Christmas versus Happy New Year.
Oh yeah, Merry New Year. What is wrong with me? I've been up for too long.
We're like the half of them were memorable survivor contestants from 2018. The other half were just holiday characters.
Merry Christmas versus Happy New Year was the season we did last season. So we worked on another season simulation. So
yes.
Be on the lookout for that. It may not be a Survivor season.
Yeah, a little bit of a change up, throwing a wrench.
Expect the unexpected. On a holiday brand steal. Okay.
So outside of that, we'll be still doing the RHAP B&B once I make my way back home. I'll be doing that this weekend with Eric Stein. I'm very excited to get Eric Stein.
Just a little inside Schmergen brawl.
Oh, yeah.
That Eric Stein was initially booked to be the feedback show on the Merge episode on RHAP.
Oh,
and then Eric Stein, okay, we're going to bump you and then I'm glad that he's able to.
I was going to say, like Final Destination style. Like he's been able to come back onto the mic, but it should be interesting. And I'm excited to get Liana's thoughts on everything as well to close out this season. We talked about the season 40 draft. That should be coming soon as well. Again, it's myself, Liana, Allie, and Akiva. It's a good amount of game talk and a lot of silliness as well. So I'm excited for people to listen to that, specifically with how wrong we are about our predictions about the world in 2020.
Right.
And of course, you know, as we segue into the Survivor offseason / preseason, I'll be doing a coverage of Picard on post-show recaps.
Ooh.
With the great Jessica Leese. We're going to be doing a few podcasts in January to sort of like warm up the warp drive a bit, you know, get people into the mood for Picard / watching those short treks as well. As we, I don't know, I guess Star Trek Discovery might premiere shortly after that as well. So getting ready for a lot of Trek. And of course, we are still spending time on the island, going down the hatch with the great Josh Wiggler. We are, I guess at the time we're recording this, we'll have released our podcast for Deus Ex Machina, a big John Locke episode. Those have been insanely fun. I also know that people, especially, you know, as the season has gone on, I don't know how many people are attuned to social media, probably wonder, you know, how Josh is, especially in the wake of everything. I don't want to speak on behalf of him, but I will say I think he's very happy right now. I think he's doing really well. And so I think if people were sort of worried about, you know, his own mental well-being after the events that occurred, he's in a good place. And yeah, not the good place.
Yeah, please, please.
No. God willing. But, you know, I'm happy to have the ability to talk with him every week and go into random tangents, like a random rap song that popped up on the course of an episode that we did last week.
Okay. Happy to hear that. All right. So, Mike, thank you for everything. It's been so much fun to have you here for these last 48 plus hours. Be sure to follow all of Mike's coverage over at parade.com and follow Mike on Twitter. He is at a Mike Bloom type.
I'm trying to stretch right now, so I'm distracting you from your
Are you stretching or flexing first?
I'm not athletic in the slightest, so I don't really know the difference between the two.
Okay. All right. And then I'm also getting ready for a lot of patron content coming up this weekend. I've got a patron 5 for 5 with the First Lady of Podcasting. I'm sure she'll be gloating about her winner pick. We'll be answering patron questions on that show. And then on Friday, I'll have our Facebook Friday while I'll be taking calls from the patrons. I'm sure there will be plenty of season 40 discussion going on there as well. You can get on over to our patron Facebook groups. Rob has a website.com/patron. Get access to our patron only podcast feed as well. We'll also be having some more announcements and updates about our live show schedule for season 40.
Ooh,
and
yeah,
boy, we are planning a few dates.
Wow. Oh, Nora's happy.
Yes.
There's dates involved.
Yes.
To get into the event, just so you know, the password's hey. Yeah, Mariana hey. Style.
Hey, let me in. Okay. All right. Mike Bloom, thank you so much.
Thank you, Rob.
Take care, everybody. Have a good one. Bye.